idiots in the 1930s would have called Hitler derangement syndrome. And if you wonder what newspapers looked like when they were bigging up Adolf Hitler and treating him like the Second Coming while attacking British politicians, then the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Mail and others provide you with a crash course in that psychology today, because they are siding with a foreign leader embarked upon an illegal war against their own democratically elected Prime Minister. Presumably, they can't wait for the refugee crisis that will almost certainly ensue.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a senior government figure says Keir Starmer is just getting on with the job following Donald Trump's remarks on his handling of the Iran conflict. Mr. Trump has renewed his scathing attack on Keir after initially blocking the use of UK military bases. The US president described the Prime Minister last night as no Winston Churchill. But the Chief Secretary to the Treasury, James Murray, has told LBC Keir was right to take his time.
President Trump has expressed, you know, his disagreement with the decision that we took about not joining the initial strikes on Iran. But that was the right decision, and it was a wise decision that the Prime Minister took. These decisions about what to do when it comes to military action are so important, and you can see how important it is for him.
The Prime Minister will face questions from MPs in the Commons this lunchtime over his decisions on Iran. The former Conservative Defence Secretary Penny Mordaunt has told LBC this morning she thinks Keir has mishandled the situation.
Seems to me that the Prime Minister thinks that if he just emphasises to Iran that we're not involved in these strikes, that they're going to leave us alone. That's an idiotic position to take. This is a country that the regime, not the people, that hate us. The average number of attacks on British shipping in the Straits of Hormuz per year is about 500.
Iranian state media says the funeral for the country's former leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, will be held tonight. He was killed in the first wave of US-Israeli strikes on Saturday. A rescue flight will leave Oman tonight for British nationals who want to leave the Middle East. The Foreign Office says priority will be given to the most vulnerable. The plane will leave the Omani capital, Muscat, at 7 p.m. UK time. One other story this morning for you. The government is to stop issuing study visas to students from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan. The Home Office says the visas are being used by people who then claim asylum when in the UK. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 19 at 10,504. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, we get through so many snacks. Have you got anything to help me save?
Well, we're always matching and lowering prices, so hundreds of Sainsbury's fresh fruit, veg and everyday products are price matched to Aldi. And every week with Nectar, you can save money on thousands of the products your family loves. So you can snack away knowing you're saving money. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. Selected products, Aldi price match not in NI. Nectar prices require Nectar account. Terms at sainsburys.co.uk/Aldi price match and nectar.com/prices terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It is 3 minutes after 10, and well, let's start the show with three observations, shall we? The first, and this is what we will explore with the first phone in today, is that this is rather good news for Keir Starmer. And it should immediately be obvious that this is rather good news for Keir Starmer. I don't know what words you took away from yesterday's show, if you were kind enough or indeed wise enough to listen. But for me, it was an absolute no contest. The words I took away from yesterday's show were words that we were reminding each other Keir Starmer had used the previous day in the House of Commons. You don't go to war without a lawful basis, and you don't go to war without a viable, thought-through plan. So if you were to hyphenate thought through, you would find yourself focusing on just five words: lawful basis and viable thought through plan. I think, and I will check with you a little later, that Donald Trump has finally provided an answer to the question that General David Petraeus, one of the heroes, if that's the right word, of the Second Gulf War, always asks, tell me how this ends. I think Donald Trump might have provided an answer to that, which would make people who are siding with him in this exercise, if they had a brain, then they would be pausing for thought. But anyway, that's to come. The second thing that occurred to me, and this is, I think, quite important, is that Donald Trump could call Keir Starmer the hero of the hour tomorrow. I don't know that I've successfully articulated this to you in the past, but nobody knows how to do it. Even now, even a year and a bit into his second term, nobody knows how to do it. The tools that we use, all of us, the tools that we use are not equipped for this character. You report the President of the United States of America praising the UK Prime Minister because you presume it's going to be a permanent or a semi-permanent condition. And then the next day, in Donald Trump's case, an hour later, he may be attacking the UK Prime Minister, and you report it with identical levels of prominence and attention. And it's mad, because in a normal universe, they've cancelled each other out. It's like somebody saying, I love you and I hate you, in the space of 6 hours. Well, which one do you pick? Do they love you or do they hate you? Do you pick the last thing that they said because of recency bias? Or do you just pick the answer that you prefer? So somebody has said to you in the course of the last 24 hours, I love you and I hate you. Do they love you or do they hate you? You don't know, really, do you? But they're gaslighting you. It's a form of coercive control. And my profession, and I am part of this problem, my profession does not know how to handle it. I'll give you a really helpful example, because I sometimes worry that no one else will. And the example I'll give you is something else that Donald Trump referred to yesterday when he was doing what all online racists do and somehow using Winston Churchill with a fat side order of ignorance to drive home his own questionable or deeply corrupt political points. And he cited Diego Garcia over the while criticizing Keir Starmer. Now, on the question of Diego Garcia, or on the question of the Chagos Islands, he has oscillated violently between approval and disapproval. So what does he think? Is he in favor or is he against this deal that was kind of imposed upon the United Kingdom by both international law and the weakening of our status caused partly by Brexit and the conclusion of negotiations that were started and almost concluded by the previous government, by a conservative government? Something that, I mean, again, with Kemi Badenoch, do you think she doesn't know that or she doesn't understand that? Is it actual ignorance of facts, or is it simple failure to understand relatively simple facts? Who knows? 52-48 with her every time. Don't forget PMQs on the way at 12. So the Chagos Island story is the perfect example of how we haven't equipped ourselves to deal with somebody who has no relationship whatsoever with consistency or truth. Is Donald Trump in favour or against the deal that the UK government has struck with Mauritius over the future of the Chagos Islands? Is he in favour or against? You don't know. Now, if you're biased, if you are prejudiced, if you are seduced by Donald Trump's curious but heady cocktail of racism, misogyny and climate change denial, then you are going to pretend to know that he is definitely against it. But if you were to be reminded that 10 minutes ago he was in favour of it, 10 minutes ago he was praising it, you would have to put your fingers in your ears and go, la, 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 la. And the profession that I am part of still doesn't know how to handle this. How do you report it if he changes his mind all the time and dominates the news cycle with a change of mind? Even if the new position, I'm not even coming close to exaggerating, even if the new position is the polar opposite of the previous position that was held just minutes earlier. If you don't believe in anything, you can do this, but journalism doesn't know how to cope. Journalism has no idea how to handle somebody who will say at 10 o'clock on Monday morning that black is black, and at 10 o'clock the next Tuesday morning say that black is most definitely white. And anybody who says that black is black is a scumbag. And I'm going to set fire to them, or I'm going to cease trading with them, or I'm going to punish them. I'm going to bring down things upon them, the likes of which have never been seen before. And then on Wednesday, he's back to saying black is black. And all the people he was threatening with hell and damnation on the Tuesday are sitting there just dazed and confused. and quite possibly traumatised. And in the case of many journalists, from the BBC down, increasingly frightened about doing anything that might provoke more legal action. I don't want to get sued. And that becomes a subconscious process by which people become frightened of saying the things that are true because the bloke who lies all the time hates having the truth pointed out. I haven't offered an opinion yet today. I don't know whether you've noticed that. Everything I have said is just factual. He has oscillated violently on the Chagos deal. And because of that, we know that next week he could be describing Keir Starmer as the best thing since sliced bread. But what will we do as journalists? We'll report it as if it's the new truth. Forget about the old truth. Here is the new truth. Keir Starmer is now the best thing since sliced bread. How much shock would you feel if Donald Trump appeared on your television screen, maybe not tomorrow, but possibly tomorrow, let's say a week on Friday, and announced that Keir Starmer is the natural heir to Winston Churchill? How shocked would you be? You wouldn't be shocked at all. You wouldn't be shocked at all, because he is incapable of shocking you now. Might still surprise you occasionally, but he will never shock you, because you have become unshockable. Because the truth has become entirely negotiable, broken, subjective, not objective. Is he in favour or against the Chagos deal? Depends when you ask him. Is he a fan or an enemy of Keir Starmer? Depends when you ask him. How does the British media respond or report all of these sea changes, these U-turns, these polar opposite positions? It reports them as if the latest thing he said is the most important, unless they don't like it, in which they'll still report it, but nowhere near as prominently as when he says things that they actually like. Which leads us to the front page of the Ugly Sisters of British print journalism, the front page of the Daily Telegraph, enormous letters. Starmer is no Churchill. Next time Donald Trump says nice things about Starmer, how prominent do you think their coverage will be? And then, of course, the Daily Mail, which I kind of wrote the book of right-wing madness that is increasingly unpatriotic and reminds us that newspapers like this were supporting Adolf Hitler right up to the moment that he invaded Poland. A prime minister who Trump mocks as no Churchill and a Navy fleet stranded in port. Whose side do you think they're on? The British side or the foreign side? Where's our sovereignty? Why aren't they cheering a prime minister for standing up for British interests and the rule of law and viable thought-through plans before you go to war? It's incredible, right? We don't know how to do it. These are, you know, once respectable newspapers. Even the Times that goes with PM is no Churchill, says Trump, as tensions rise. So that is not celebratory in the way that the Telegraph front page is. They are not cheering on a foreign leader who wishes us harm. But the Mail and the Telegraph are. They are cheering on a foreign leader who wishes our system of democracy harm, who rides roughshod over the rule of law, who rides roughshod over international and domestic law, remember. He's a multiple felon, a multiple bankrupt, a self-confessed sex offender. And yet these newspapers that would once have seen themselves as bastions of law and order and family values and respectability are falling over themselves to disappear up his fundament in a sort of sycophantic display. And it leaves Keir Starmer today in a most extraordinary position, because I truly believe that this is the best thing that could have happened to Keir Starmer this week. With the caveat, because now, in case you haven't noticed, and you probably have, I am now falling in headlong into the trap that I've just described. Do you see? I'm falling headlong into the trap of treating Trump's latest announcement with respect and gravity. Donald Trump has announced, during a succession of half-truths and blatant lies regarding everything from the Chagos Islands to windmills and Shakira or Sharia law, I think he got it right, but the well from which he's been drinking his understanding of Sharia law in this country is the same well from which your friendly neighbourhood racist writing about Shakira law on Twitter has been drinking. He, in this conference, in this moment, slagged off Keir Starmer by saying that he was no Winston Churchill. I mean, if I were Will Smith, I would suggest that Donald Trump should get the name of our wartime leader out of his mouth. But I'm not, so I won't. I will, however, point out that this is the sound of me falling in some ways into exactly the same trap that I've just been describing to you, while acknowledging throughout that I'm part of the problem, because how else do you do it? That's not the phone-in. How else do you do it? He's the President of the United States of America. You know, he's not Judge Dredd, but it's similar. Judge Dredd's word was law. Donald Trump's words are news, and they are big news. And it has not yet mattered that the very next day, the next hour, the next moment, he could quite comfortably say the polar opposite of what everybody is having kittens about today, whether they're fluffy, pretty kittens or whether they're negative kittens, whether your kittens are kittens of disgust and fear or kittens of enthusiasm and celebration. He could say the polar opposite tomorrow. I hope it doesn't sound conceited to you, but I find it extraordinary how completely so many members of this profession have failed still to recognise that. I haven't got a solution to it, but I have to recognise it. You have to point out that if you're going to report this so big, then you have to report the U-turn when he describes Keir Starmer as his best friend at least as big as well. And of course you don't, because you're a right-wing outlet or a right-wing mouthpiece or a right-wing politician, and you are still so seduced by either the racism or the misogyny or the climate change denial that you will forgive him absolutely everything he does, despite being the most obviously depraved and disgusting politician that the West has created in living memory. And now he has slagged off Prime Minister Starmer. Now he has accused Prime Minister Starmer of being no Winston Churchill. And before you remind me of the many, many deeply black marks on Winston Churchill's record, it is meant as an insult. It is buying into the very rose-tinted and often evidence-ignoring perception of Winston Churchill as a hero of absolutely unimpeachable magnificence. A great wartime leader. Make no bones about it, but he was also a massive imperialist and I mean, almost certainly a white supremacist. So that's not what Trump is referring to, although, of course, he would personally admire the white supremacism, just as Elon Musk would. But when he slags off Keir Starmer, I feel proud that the Prime Minister has got this so right. I haven't felt very proud of our Prime Minister lately, or indeed of our country's performance on many, many stages, domestically, internationally less so. He is a much better Prime Minister internationally than he is domestically. The other bit that didn't get picked up by much Western media yesterday was Trump describing Zelensky as P.T. Barnum, the famous circus impresario. So, you know, a genuine hero, a man truly resisting hideous autocracy and illegal wars, resisting them, not starting them. Donald Trump has joined Vladimir Putin in doing. Trump was insulting 2 days ago, describing Zelensky as P.T. Barnum and describing Starmer as being no Churchill. What side would you want to be on if you were even vaguely honest? Vaguely committed to, you know, little things like decency, democracy, transparency and the rule of law. What side would you want to be on? The self-confessed sex offender, multiple felon, bankrupt, who's trousering money like it's going out of fashion, while his press secretary says it can't possibly be corruption because we're doing it all out in the open. She says that out loud. And then you've got your Badenochs and your Farages and your Daily Mails and your Daily Telegraphs queuing up to pretend they're patriotic while actually blowing smoke up the backside of a man who would not even pour water on us if we were on fire. How do you know that? Because you've watched him. You know what he is. You know who he is. So, point number one, this is good for Keir Starmer. Point number two, do you think all of the people calling for us to be getting more heavily involved in this scenario are going to be the ones that are throwing open their doors to welcome the refugees who will be rendered dispossessed and homeless by the attacks upon Iran? The tidal wave of humanity that many experts are warning is set to emanate from Iran. Do you think they're the same people? Do you think Farage is looking forward to that? Well, he probably is, actually, because he can make disgusting racist Nazi-themed posters about it and use it to shore up his support among his own voters, who we discovered yesterday want to deport people who are British but brown, including some of his most recent recruits to his own party. About 20% of reform voters, as we'll discover later in the programme, think that people like Nadeem Zahawi should be deported. So he might well welcome another refugee crisis, because immigration is about to hit pretty close to zero. And how is he going to frighten your Auntie Doris if there aren't actually any foreigners arriving here in droves? Answer, well, here come the Iranians, the casualties of the war that I called for and supported. Let's call for them to be sunk in their dinghies in the middle of the English Channel, because it's all I've got. It's all I am. It's what I do. I'm Nigel Farage. I stoke up racism. So, spoiler alert, all of the people, whether they're in politics or the media, currently pretending that they can't remember what happened in Iraq or they have no idea who or what Donald Trump is, will not be welcoming the wave of refugees likely now to be launched from the carnage in Iran. They will not be. They will be at the very back of it. They won't even be in the queue. They will be attacking them. They will be calling them fighting-age men. They will be claiming that they are all sex offenders. And they will be completely ignoring the fact that they were full-throated cheerleaders for the military action that has rendered these people refugees. If not when it happens. So, strange question. I haven't played you the clip yet. I'll play it to you after this. But this is really good for Keir Starmer. Albeit that it could be reversed again tomorrow. And the reason it's good for Keir Starmer is that it completely shuts down one wing of criticism. A well-meaning but largely misunderstanding section of our society that thinks Keir Starmer has moved too close to Donald Trump. If Donald Trump is publicly slagging him off in public, it's going to be very hard to sustain the argument that Keir Starmer has become some sort of poodle. So he's shut down the people who think that the UK shouldn't be defending its own interests or its allies, Trump has, by reminding us what a warmongering fraud looks like in these kind of moments, and what they have to say about the men and the women who believe in a lawful basis and who believe in viable thought through plans. Trump has handed him a gold star for getting things right. And of course it leaves all the people on the right forced to pretend that they can't remember Iraq. They have to close their eyes to the fact that Trump is the most unreliable player on the world stage. And they have to, of course, hope that you won't notice that they're about to cause another refugee crisis, which much of their political status depends upon attacking. And that's the end of my TED talk, I think, for today. I didn't even get to the third thing, did I? Well, I did. It's the complete unreliability of Trump, as demonstrated by what he was saying about Chagos yesterday. So, in one sense, it doesn't matter that he slagged off Keir Starmer, because he might be blowing smoke up his bum tomorrow. But in another sense, if you're going to be taking this stuff as gospel, and this is a big problem for Keir Starmer, then you're going to be completely ignoring everything we know about Donald Trump, and everything we know about how unreliable and inconsistent he is. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need to tell me whether or not you agree that Donald Trump has given Keir Starmer the biggest possible present at this point in the unfolding Iran crisis by making it clear that he is not in lockstep with the almost certainly illegal actions in Iran. And I wonder whether Keir Starmer's critics on either side of the aisle are going to be honest enough to admit that. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Is this a good or a bad moment for Keir Starmer?
Conflict in the Middle East. Follow live on LBC.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Daddy? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Time for a new Mercedes-Benz? We're celebrating 140 years of innovation. And this March, there's offers across the range. Like the new all-electric CLA Saloon. The 2026 European Car of the Year. Now available with 0% APR representative and a £1,000 saving. Discover the most intelligent car we've ever built. Book your test drive today. Offer ends 31st of March, subject to status and availability. Exclusions and T's and C's apply. Mercedes-Benz Finance. Savings include VAT for cash and finance customers.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play.
Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honeypot Bears, and four giant slides of the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Kart, Trampolines, Magical Wood, and Cafes!
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Down.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
24 minutes after 10 is the time. We should have a quick listen to Donald Trump speaking in the Oval Office yesterday, deciding to attack Keir Starmer, which, of course, is a vindication for everybody who warned that giving him a state visit and treating him like a cross between King Arthur and the Messiah would almost certainly not secure any long-term decency or kindness, but because he is incapable of decency or kindness. But it's interesting to hear it confirmed in such stark terms.
By the way, I'm not happy with the UK either. That island that you read about, the lease, okay, he made it for whatever reason. He made a lease of the island. Somebody came and took it away from him. And it's taken 3-4 days for us to work out where we can land there. It would have been much more convenient landing there as opposed to flying many extra hours. So we are very surprised. This is not Winston Churchill that we're dealing with.
And on it goes.
This is not the age of Churchill. I will say the UK has been very, very uncooperative with that stupid island that they have, that they gave away and took a 100-year lease, having to do with perhaps indigenous people claiming the island that never even saw the island before. What's that all about? And they ruin relationships. It's a shame.
I mean, that doesn't actually make literal sense. They never saw that island before. What's that all about? I mean, you'll remember it was a good deal, then it was a bad deal. Now it's caused some minor inconvenience to his plans for attacking Iran, so he's lashing out again. This time next week it'll probably be a good deal again. The job of a journalist, of course, is to, if someone says it's raining, is to stick your head outside and find out whether or not it gets wet. Unless you're working in most of the British media at the moment, in which case it is to trumpet Donald Trump's nonsense and pretend that it both makes sense and causes proper problems for Keir Starmer. I mean, that was absolute gibberish, but he did do one thing. Those two lines that I've been hitting you over the head with now for 2 days, one from David Petraeus, tell me how this ends, and the other from Colin Powell, make sure you have a specific political objective when you undertake military action. So tell me how this ends, and or make sure you have a specific political objective, David Petraeus, Colin Powell, latterly, Keir Starmer, you need a viable thought-through plan. Yesterday, Donald Trump finally revealed what the end game is, what the viable thought-through plan looks like, and how this ends.
I guess the worst case would be we do this, and then somebody takes over who's as bad as the previous person, right? That could happen. We don't want that to happen. That would probably be the worst. You go through this, and then in 5 years, you realize you put somebody in who is no better. So we'd like to see somebody in there that's going to bring it back for the people.
What? Sorry, pardon? So there you have it. You are either with that unhinged gibberish, or you are against it. And Donald Trump has confirmed, if there were any doubt at all, that Keir Starmer has established himself as being against it. And it's the proudest I've been of our Prime Minister in a very long time. How about you? 0345 6060973. Claudette's in Lewisham. Claudette, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I just want to remind anybody that thinks that... Oh, sorry, good morning, Jeff.
Hello, Claudette. How lovely to hear from you.
I would just like to remind everybody of a calling programme you did just a couple of months ago, I think it was. I sat here in tears listening to the service members of the armed forces and their families having had a huge put down by Trump, saying that they barely did anything during Afghanistan. They were on the back lines, and it was all about America doing everything and not needing anyone.
454 dead British men and women in that engagement.
Exactly. He is not... All he wants is what he wants. The man is as changeable as the weather. So nobody should think that us going along and helping him is going to make it any better for anyone. We will go in today and enhance with tariffs tomorrow. I am really proud, and I don't say that often because, you know, I was a lifelong Labour voter and I've decided I'm not doing that anymore for various reasons.
Sure.
But what Trump has done, what Keir Starmer has done is absolutely right, and I feel very proud that he's taken this stance.
He's threaded a needle. He's threaded a needle, hasn't he? Because
he
is defending our interests and our territories, but he's also detaching himself from this ludicrous exercise being undertaken by Donald Trump, a multiple criminal, and Benjamin Netanyahu, in the eyes of many people, and quite possibly the law, a war criminal.
Exactly. Absolutely. And I think this is, and if anyone believes that this isn't some kind of, you know, look the other way Epstein war, or Netanyahu knows that when he's down he's probably going to end up in prison, you're just deluding yourself, to be quite honest.
And so why on earth would a UK Prime Minister want to, well, however much you may welcome the removal of the Ayatollah, without a viable thought-through plan, without a plan of action on how it ends, without a clear objective, then you are essentially throwing petrol on a bonfire, and that is what they're doing, and that's what people like Badenoch and Farage and presumably the Mail and the Telegraph and various broadcasters, that's what they want the Prime Minister to do, to hand him another petrol can full of British interests and potentially British soldiers. It's 10:30. That thing that Claudette refers to, I played to you yesterday, I think perhaps she wasn't listening, and I reminded you yesterday, of course you're not going to listen to every minute of every hour of this programme, but it's important to thread these needles. I will remind you of that clip after this, because it was in January that he insulted the memory of dead British military personnel. January. And now everybody's, well, not everybody, but the people who seek to dominate the political discourse in this country, whether they're politicians, pundits, or commentators, they are trying to portray Trump as the person you should side with against Keir Starmer, while one of them protects the interests of British troops and one of them dances on their graves. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer is preparing to face MPs in the Commons as his decision-making over the Iran conflict is called into question. President Trump has intensified his criticism of Sir Keir for initially blocking the use of UK military bases. Opposition figures here are also criticising the speed at which UK defence assets are being deployed to the Middle East. The first government charter flight will take off later, bringing Britons home who are stranded in the region. The Foreign Office says it'll leave Muscat in Oman tonight, with the most vulnerable given priority. And the Resolution Foundation says the UK's immediate economic future is highly uncertain. The think tank says the war in the Middle East threatens to stunt growth in living standards. In a spring statement yesterday, the Chancellor Rachel Reeves insisted that her plan is working. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC.
At Lloyds, we love that moment a dream becomes a reality. Like for Rob, he's in the supermarket when his phone bleeps. It's his daughter. She's in Manchester, at uni. The message is short. She's happy. And just like that, Rob knows every penny he invested and saved was worth it. He texts her back. Heart emoji. At Lloyds, we've been asking the nation about their dreams. That's how we know Rob's story and thousands of others just like it. We've been backing the nation's aspirations for 250 years. So when it's time to realise your dreams, we're ready when you are. Bank on Lloyds.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto, from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "All Change, Please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
I've always said, will they be there if we ever needed them? And that's really the ultimate test. And I'm not sure of that. I know that we would have been there or we would be there. But will they be there? And let's hope that that never happens. We've never needed them. We have never really asked anything of them. You know, they'll say they sent some troops to Afghanistan or this or that. And they did. They stayed a little back, a little off the front lines. But we've been very good to Europe and to many other countries. And, you know, now under my administration, that began because we had a very successful first term. That began then, but it has to be a two-way street.
What a hideous creep. Honestly, the emotion that was engendered among my listeners from military families, some of whom had lost loved ones in that conflict in Afghanistan, was off the charts. And of course, a week later, we've all moved on. The pendulum has swung back. He said something nice, and all the papers were reporting it as if that's the new Trump. There's only one Trump, and he's hideous. He dances on the graves of dead soldiers, whether they're British or American or Danish or any other NATO ally, and this week, he slags off our Prime Minister for not being like Winston Churchill, a man that would have horsewhipped Donald Trump out of any office. Madness. So, is this a good thing or a bad thing for Starmer? Graham's in The Hague. Graham, what would you like to say?
Hey, James. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, mate. What's on your mind?
Well, I think, first of all, it's you've got to understand that using procedure and the rules with Trump, playing within the rules, it's kind of like playing chess with a pigeon. You know, sooner or later, it's going to crap all over the board, knock the pieces over and fly away cooing about how it won.
But what choice do you have, though?
Well, okay, so in this case, the choice that you have is to take what he's handed you, which is a comparison to Churchill, and channel that comparison and say, yeah, actually, I may not be a Churchill. However, what did Churchill do? He was instrumental in creating the rules-based order, which has kept peace in Europe for the last 75 years. And
European Convention on Human Rights, anybody?
There you go. Starmer can stand up and say, we have a choice. Yeah. We go along with what is quite visibly illegal war and aggression conducted by a convicted criminal and an indicted war criminal, or we stand for humanity. The choice is ours. Mic drop, walk away.
He's not going to do that because he has to go back to the chessboard and tariffs and things matter.
The reason why he has to do this is because Trump is actually painting himself into a corner. His statement yesterday about isolating Spain is a joke. He can't do that. Even Merz has said that Germany can't negotiate trade with the US, which would exclude Spain because of the EU.
This is the David Davis school of EU comprehension, isn't it? So Trump, for people who aren't across this little bit of the story, has threatened to cut off all trade with Spain, which of course you can't do because Spain is part of a single market. It's part of a single trading bloc. So it's up there with David Davis, shortly before he was made Secretary of State for Brexit, explaining that he was going to do individual trade deals with Germany, which is simply not allowed.
There you go. And the point is that Starmer now has... Well, I personally believe that Starmer is pretty much toast in the UK. I think...
it's not quite over. The fat lady is gargling, Graham, I think.
The screws are being applied,
yes.
And a lot of those screws are being applied by the very man we're discussing right now, Donald Trump. The signing away of the Sunset Clause for Trident Management, for example, has just put Trident Management in perpetuity into the hands of the US. Okay, the handing over of NHS data to Palantir. I mean,
we've all got lists of things that we're cross about. If I just steer you back to this central question, the phone-in that we're actually having today.
One final point, which is this.
No, hang on. Sorry, I'm asking you a question that everybody else is listening to the answers for. So, is this or is this not? Because respectfully, you haven't answered the question yet. Is this a good thing to happen to Keir Starmer?
I said exactly that it's a potentially a good thing if Starmer has the audacity to take it.
Yeah, but as of now,
he's been handed. As of now, as I say, it's a potential. We're on the threshold, James.
You can't do me a yes or a no.
Starmer has to choose.
Okay, Tony's in Greenock. Tony, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Yeah, I think it's a badge of honour at this point in time for him.
I think he's going along with a list of a growing list of leaders around the world who Trump has a complete disdain for.
I can now nod along with you sagely, but he could say the opposite tomorrow.
Well, I think the British government, not necessarily, well, Starmer probably as the head of the British government, they're probably now thinking, Trump can say what he wants. Let Trump say what Trump says.
Yeah.
We'll deal with the real adults in the background.
Yeah, well, then what do we do then? For example, I know this isn't something you need particularly to worry about, but what does journalism do if it decides to leave the American president out of its contemplations? You can't do that.
Well, journalism as a whole needs a bit, much more of a backbone than it's ever had. It needs to, especially in America, they need to challenge a lot more than
they
are.
They can't, mate, because their bosses are all bending the knee, and the bits that aren't currently in the pockets of Trump-supporting oligarchs are being snapped up, sold off, and hoovered up as we speak. So you're not going to get that. And I didn't mean that so much, because I agree with you. I'm just pointing out the difficulties of doing something. Well,
was there not somebody challenged Rubio yesterday?
Yes. Because they are there, they are doing it, but that guy won't be allowed near Rubio again anytime soon. Yeah, I'm just pointing out the operational difficulties of speaking truth to power when power is completely corrupt. I'm not for a second disagreeing with you, but the thing that you're nudging us towards, and I find this fascinating, is that you ignore what he says and focus on what he does, which is what his supporters used to say we should do before he proved that when he says something, he's almost certainly going to do it. But what he said about Starmer and Churchill is meaningless in the great scheme of things. It's utterly meaningless unless you're an idiot who wants a hammer with which you can hit Keir Starmer over the head, in which case you're going to bite Donald Trump's arm off. That's the stuff that should be ignored. It's got nothing to do with how many people died in Tehran yesterday or how many missiles Netanyahu is sending into Lebanon while everybody's looking the other way. That's the bit that we failed on. Journalists, members of the public, whatever it is, focusing on this ludicrous school bully banter about Churchill at a moment like this. I don't know how you break that spell, Tony. I don't know how you don't do it.
The easy option for Starmer or one of his representatives would have said, well, let Trump's no Obama. And that would have, that would have played to his ego.
I like that.
Take the dignified silence and work away in the background with the people that actually know what the bigger picture is here. It's a long-term thing. This special relationship that they keep banging on about has been in place for, I think, did you not say yesterday, it was 80 years since Churchill made that first announcement about it, Mitchell first mentioned it. So it's a long-term thing. Presidents come, presidents go, prime ministers come, prime ministers go. But I think underneath, and at the moment, it's an increasingly lower level than ever before. But there is still a relationship between the British and the United States at an intelligence level, at a defence level.
But you see, this is a first-term call. This is a call that I could have taken in his first term when it would have been much, much truer when people like Fiona Hill were in the room where it happens. And it's not second term. Second term, mate, the room is full of idiots and weirdos.
Yeah, and that's what I was alluding to, though. Yeah. I was alluding to the fact that has gone further down because of the nature of the people that surround him now. But in the bowels of the Pentagon or someplace, there will be people who actually know what is going on and have formed relationships with their British counterparts, and those will sustain throughout Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who they are, though, at the moment. They certainly don't own any media in the United States of America, and they don't have very prominent positions in his regime. It's not a coincidence that he's appointed people that you wouldn't trust to run a bath, to run things like the State Department. Well, Rubio possibly is the best of a very bad bunch, although I would not be surprised if Rubio gets the treatment from Trump sooner rather than later. But absolute weirdos like Vance or Hegseth or the Kennedy character, absolute weirdos, actually, all of whom clearly hate him, but are sort of in hock like medieval lords and earls to the Sun King. I don't know. Maybe I obsess about that more than normal people do. The simple question of why we're doing this. I mean, we're not. We're focusing more upon the question of whether or not Starmer has got it right, which is only really the question that matters, and whether or not, because I fall into the trap like everybody else does, Trump insulting him or trying to insult him yesterday proves that he's got it right. A little more after this on, well, I'll do it now, actually, on that Spanish position. The Prime Minister of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, has gone as far or further than any other European leader in condemning the action on Iran. And he just puts it so simply, you can't respond to one illegality with another, because that's how humanity's great disasters begin. As I've heard people who I thought would know better, contending that because Iran breaks laws, then we should break laws in order to break Iran. At which point you become a criminal. I look at the response to the terrorism of Hamas. If you become a war criminal in response to crimes, then there are just two crimes and two criminals on the map, on the table. That line there is one of the neatest I've heard, and I presume it's in translation. You can't respond to one illegality with another, because that's how humanity's great disasters begin. So welcome, if you want, and most of us do, the toppling of the regime in Iran, or at least the leader of the regime, because the regime ain't gone anywhere yet, but recognise that it should not have been done like this. And you cannot be part of it, because, in the words of the Spanish Prime Minister, you can't play Russian roulette with the destiny of millions. You can't respond to one illegality with another, because that's how humanity's great disasters begin. You look at some of the commentary from middle-class warmongers in this country, and you wonder if they've ever even heard of the cliche that two wrongs don't make a right. I mean, I'm reading editorials and hearing people expound that two wrongs definitely make a right. We might not have the right to go into Iran under international law, but they're awful. They've done lots of wrongs, and therefore we must do wrongs because that will make a right. In fact, that is the distillation of almost all of the rightish commentary over this that I've heard. Two wrongs definitely do make a right. What is the point of creating a cliche reflecting the obvious accuracy of a saw or a dictum, if you're then going to turn around and say, oh, no, that's not true at all, two wrongs don't make a right. You're going to turn around and say, oh, no, you don't need a specific political objective. Colin Powell didn't know what he was talking about. You don't need a lawful basis to go to war. Clear off Keir Starmer. You're a lawyer, not a leader. You don't need a viable thought-through plan. What does General David Petraeus know about war? You don't need to know how it's going to end before you start things. You just need this guy in charge. You just need Donald Trump gibbering meaninglessly about all sorts of things. You just need Donald Trump explaining explicitly and clearly exactly what the plan is.
I guess the worst case would be we do this and then somebody takes over who's as bad as the previous person, right? That could happen. We don't want that to happen. It would probably be the worst. You go through this and then in 5 years you realize you put somebody in who was no better. So we'd like to see somebody in there that's going to bring it back for the people.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I didn't hear the Lib Dems go nuts about the cost of bringing Afghans on flights out of Afghanistan. I didn't hear Ed Davey asking whether they had to pay their fair share. Their argument is, these Dubai Brits, with their turkey teeth and their Swiss bank accounts, don't deserve these flights because they haven't paid it. Well, apply that to all manner of individuals who come from overseas into this country, contribute nothing, and who the Lib Dems are apparently fine with.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
A Southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning. Listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Backing your future.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato.
Whoa!
And spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
James O'Brien on LBC.
Right, it's 10 to 11. PMQ's on the way at 12. I've got a couple of guests that I want you to meet, including one young man who has a frankly hideous story of being targeted by online racists. There's a lot more of it about than there used to be. And, of course, some figures in this country who I don't even know if they should know. Well, they should know better, but I don't know that they ever will know better, are stoking up and fomenting these hideous ancient hatreds as if it was going out of fashion at the moment. But I'm conscious the last two and a half days, really, of talking even more than usual, which is, frankly, an extraordinary achievement. So if you do want to give me a call, I don't know what we'll do at 11, but we'll be staying in this territory. If you do want to give me a call and book a place for the next hour of the program, simply, or the next first half hour of the next hour of the program, simply to tell me your reaction, your response, because sometimes it's good to vent, right? I get to vent every day. I'm disgusted at Donald Trump, not only invoking the memory of Winston Churchill, a fine wartime leader, but a flawed human being and a deeply controversial politician. Invoking the memory of Winston Churchill 3 months after dancing on the graves of 454 dead British military personnel. I mean, how, you've never heard me swear on this show, but how dare he? Seriously. How dare he? And he does. And then he gets cheered to the rafters by British politicians and British journalists and British commentators who, what, didn't notice the insult to our war dead or didn't care enough? Too busy attacking footballers for not wearing poppies to actually attack an American president for insulting the memories of our war dead. It's extraordinary. So if you do just want to respond to what Trump said in the Oval Office yesterday, if you do just want to tell me what your reaction to it was, then give me a call on 03456060973. The central question we've been asking is whether or not it is actually a good thing for Starmer, not just because it proves that he's morally and legally right, but also because it chimes with public opinion in this country. And it shuts down the, and I haven't measured this, demographic, it shuts down the argument that he has been too supine and too supportive of Trump and Netanyahu's latest, almost certainly illegal adventure. Alan's in Leeds. Alan, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, Alan.
I've just got a rueful smile on my face. I mean,
I'm going back to the
1990s when I think the last Prime Minister, if you can call it that, I had respect for was Tony Blair.
Yeah.
And I just remember this similar situation. There was when I was more bushy, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and militant, and I voted for Tony Blair to get in, and sort of like I thought it did a lot of good.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
When it came to the Iraq War, hindsight's great, yeah, but it's very naive to think that if there had been another, if the Tories had been in power, they would not have followed George W. Bush into Iraq as well.
There's no doubt about that, I don't think. I forget who was in charge. Who was in charge in 98, 99? Was it Michael Hatt? Ian Duncan Smith had a go. William Hague? Did William Hague have a go? They'd have all gone into... I think they voted for it, Alan. I don't think there was any opposition to the march to Iraq for the British Army. Maybe the Lib Dems did. I can't remember. I was only...
I know he had some people walk out of the cabinet around that time.
He had some dissent from the Labour ranks. I think Robin Cook and almost certainly Claire Short and politicians like that. But I don't think that. I think there was almost unanimous support from the right wing benches, as there almost always is for war.
And then he gets called a war criminal for taking us into it in hindsight.
Yeah.
And it just seems the same thing is happening to Starmer, and he's not gone in, and he's being lambasted for not taking us in.
You can't win. I mean, yesterday's show was focusing pretty heavily on Iraq and upon the absolute absence of any recollection of it or contemplation of it or lessons learned from it from the people who were sabre-rattling and warmongering again here. And the parallels are, I mean, not just geographic, but they're really obvious. It's about going into a Middle Eastern country and removing the leader without having any idea whatsoever what's going to replace it. The only difference is that, as with corruption, defended by Trump's press secretary, as it can't possibly be corruption because it's all happening out in the open. If it was real corruption, we'd be hiding it. Okay, yeah. The only difference is that George W. Bush didn't have a plan. We thought he did. Donald Trump's quite open about the fact that he doesn't. That he doesn't have a plan.
And people still support him.
And people still support him. And not only support him, but think that we should have stapled ourselves to him and his completely plan-free activity. Can I ask you a weird question?
Go on.
How shocked would you be if it emerged 5 years down the line that just huge sums of money had made their way from places like Saudi Arabia and other Middle Eastern allies, possibly Israel, into Donald Trump's actual pockets in order to, because we've heard about a week of diplomacy with Netanyahu and bin Salman pouring propaganda into his ear or calling upon him to do it, knowing what we know about Donald Trump. On a scale of 1 to 10, Alan, how shocked would you be if he'd actually been paid to do this?
Well, it's just the old follow the money, isn't it?
I think it often is a case of follow the money. Absolutely no suggestion that that is what happened. Just an entirely rhetorical device, a question, a chat between friends, Alan and me, and of course you. 10:56 is the time. Dave is in Hammersmith. Dave, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, Dave.
I think I'm going to start out by saying I'm not a big fan of Starmer.
Sure.
I think he's been pretty weak generally throughout his tenure. But on this occasion, I think he's shown incredible strength to stand up to what is essentially the school ground's biggest bully. He could have easily just bent me and said yes to Trump, given him all the airfields.
You very much get the impression that's what Badenoch or Farage would do.
Well, again, everyone says they would in a different situation. It doesn't matter what Starmer does. Those two will always sit on the other side of the fence and point fingers. So until you're in Starmer's position, and like I said, I'm not a big fan of Starmer.
Sure.
But until you're in Starmer's position and you're wearing his pants, no one knows what they're going to do.
I put a few quid on both of those two doing whatever Donald Trump told them to do, and then the very next day wanging on about how important sovereignty is. We shouldn't have any independent policy here. We shouldn't have any autonomy. We shouldn't have any sovereignty. We should just be a vassal state and do whatever the corrupt president of the United States of America wants us to do. Oh, look at me. I'm Nigel Farage. I'm a massive patriot. Did you see the bit with his dad yesterday?
Whose dad, sorry?
Trump's dad.
I did, and
that was mad.
It is a little bit mad. I don't know if you've played the clip yet, but essentially he said to the press that his mother was born in the UK, and then he went on to stumble as he normally does, and he said, "Oh, my father was born in the UK." It's like, what a load of nonsense! I don't know why we the press, the UK, spend so much time. We waste so much time on listening to what
I don't
he has
know
to say.
Either. I mean, I feel that. Go on.
99% of what he says on a day-to-day basis is just waffle.
It is gibberish.
He gets carried away. He doesn't actually think about what he says. And the American people eat it up. And we eat it up by the looks
of
things.
Yeah, but I don't know what to do. I mean, should I have completely ignored it today? I feel my job is to push back against what everybody else is doing on mornings like this. And I'm reminded of Brexit. I'm reminded of Boris Johnson. I'm reminded of Liz Truss. I'm reminded of austerity. I'm reminded of Dominic Cummings. If we just ignored all their gibberish, then there wouldn't have been any resistance to it at all. And
we've got enough problems ourselves, haven't we?
We've got more than enough problems ourselves. What did you say about that clip a minute ago, Dave? Because I like the idea of this being a collective effort, this programme. What did you say about the clip a minute ago?
About Trump saying...
I think you said, I don't know whether you've played it yet or not.
Yeah, about his father being from the UK as well, born in the UK.
It's funny you should say that, Dave.
That country, UK, and I love that country. I love it. My mother was born there. I love it. My mother was born there. My father was born... Right, he knows all about my father. My father was born there. So, you know, very places that you sort of automatically very, very feel warmly about.
I mean... His father was born in Bavaria. He was born in Germany. Imagine if Joe Biden had said that his father was born in a country that he was not actually born in. But hey-ho, that just gets glossed over. Calling Volodymyr Zelensky a sort of circus impresario, that gets glossed over. Dancing on the grave of 454 British war dead, that gets glossed over. He wasn't just born in Germany, he became an immigrant to the United States of America after he dodged the draft in Bavaria. He was sort of kicked out of Germany. That was his grandfather, forgive me. So his dad definitely wasn't born in the UK, he was born in the Bronx, and his granddad was born in Germany.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Keir Starmer is preparing to face MPs in the Commons as his decision-making over the Iran conflict is called into question. Donald Trump intensified his criticism of Keir again last night for initially blocking the use of UK air bases. Opposition figures here are also criticising the lack of UK military presence in the Middle East. Government Minister James Murray was asked on LBC earlier why HMS Dragon will take a week to be deployed.
We know that we've now decided that we need to send that extra capability with HMS Dragon as well as Wildcat helicopters. Right. But that builds on the defensive capability that we've been building up in the past few weeks.
Israel says it's hit security command centres in Iran in a fresh wave of missile strikes this morning. Israeli forces have also bombed several areas in Lebanon, which it says are Iran-backed Hezbollah targets. The United States says it's severely degraded Iranian air defences and destroyed its navy. The first government charter flight will take off tonight, bringing Britons home who are stranded in the Middle East. The Foreign Office says it'll leave Muscat in Oman, with the most vulnerable given priority. Ministers say they're also working with airlines to secure more routes out of the region. Tasmin Davis has been holidaying in Abu Dhabi and has spoken to LBC.
The response of the UAE government has highlighted to me, particularly being here and then in close communication with friends and family at home, the British government could be doing more. It's clear, as I say, we know exactly what they are putting in place. Yet we speak to people at home who I do think have a very different feel for what the situation is here.
In other news this morning, the Resolution Foundation says the UK's immediate economic future is highly uncertain. The think tank says the war in the Middle East threatens to stunt growth in living standards. In her spring statement yesterday, the Chancellor Rachel Reeves insisted that her plan is working. Forecasts for growth have been downgraded this year, but the figures don't factor in the Iran conflict. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 40 at 10,524. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some light rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Really? The real secret to feeling young is simply living young. And right now you can roll young with £500 off across the SEAT range on top of existing offers, including the fun new SEAT Ibiza and Arona. But this offer won't last forever. Order by the 31st of March. SEAT. Rolling young. UK retail customers excluding contract hire. 18 plus. Order by 31st of March and collect by 30th of June. Subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 11. The beginning and the end We are, of course, stuck in the middle with you. But we haven't focused much on the beginning or the end. Talked a lot about General David Petraeus's words, tell me how this ends. But we haven't had a go at answering that question, and I think that we should. But we also don't know why it started. You might think you know. You might have believed, for example, the claims that Iran was poised to develop a nuclear capability. And you might have missed the claims 9 months ago that that was the rationale for the last attack, which completely destroyed their nation, any nuclear capability. Benjamin Netanyahu claiming a generational victory 9 months before he felt compelled to launch another attack. You might be unaware, while we're talking about Netanyahu, that he had been claiming Iran was on the brink of developing nuclear weapons since 1996, or at least that's the earliest we can find. It may well go back even further. So it is what is technically known as a load of old bollocks. So why has the war started? And how will it end? Would you like to have a crack at answering either of those questions, or indeed both? Because, as one writer points out in The Guardian today, it was months before we discovered that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We'd had an invasion, a regime change, an investigation, and then finally the truth. But we know there was no warning of an imminent threat from Iran. We knew on the day that the attack was launched. Marco Rubio himself said that there was no evidence of a preemptive strike being planned, and added very important information, as we reported yesterday, Israel wanted to strike first. I'll remind you of what Rubio said. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces, and we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties. I mean, are you going to buy that? Left, right and centre? Are you going to buy that fully paid up account of what happened from the US Secretary of State? We got no evidence whatsoever of a preemptive strike, but we knew that Netanyahu was going to undertake a preemptive strike, so we attacked the target. Ah, come on. So it's a good question. We don't know why Donald Trump has started this war. I'd like you to have a crack at answering that question. 0345-6060-973 is the number that you need. Why do you think Donald Trump has started this war? There is very little mystery about why Benjamin Netanyahu has. I mean, self-interest, most obviously, keeps him still off the hook for the corruption trial that is waiting for him. And, of course, he is the leader of a cabinet that contains truly hideous individuals dedicated to projects like a Greater Israel. Any attack upon neighbours is to be welcomed by them. And, make no mistake, Iran poses a threat to Israel in some ways. The drones and the missiles that it routinely could direct at Israel, albeit that they would do a tiny fraction of the damage that Israel can do to, has done to Iran and indeed to Lebanon this week. It's real. You fire a missile, even if it doesn't hurt anybody, it's an act of aggression and you can expect a retaliation. So why Netanyahu is on this path is not very difficult to decipher. But why on earth Donald Trump is involved? I think any answer goes. And the thing about Donald Trump, I've even speculated very wildly myself this morning that I would not be truly shocked if someone had, you know, a bunch of potentates from that part of the world had written him a check. What would it take to get you to go into war, Mr. Trump? What would it take? Well, This is a man who gives a speech honouring dead soldiers and spends 20 minutes talking about his curtains in the ballroom that he's building. So why do you think Trump has done it? And the polar opposite question, tell me how this ends. Tell me how this ends. Because, again, I can't believe that more people aren't pointing this stuff out. You've heard the clip of him yesterday. I'll play it to you again because they're only short. So this is him revealing that there is no plan, okay? This is him absolutely, categorically blowing the lid off the fact that there is no plan whatsoever. So, Colin Powell, make sure you have a specific political objective. David Petraeus, tell me how this ends. Keir Starmer, you need a viable, thought-through plan. Donald Trump.
I guess the worst case would be we do this and then somebody takes over who's as bad as the previous person, right? That could happen. We don't want that to happen. That would probably be the worst. You go through this and then In 5 years, you realize you put somebody in who was no better. So we'd like to see somebody in there that's going to bring it back for the people.
Okay, now you remember when he kidnapped the Venezuelan president, he replaced him with the Venezuelan deputy.
Well, most of the people we had in mind are dead. So, you know, we had some in mind from that group that is dead. And now we have another group, they may be dead also, based on reports. So I guess you have a third wave coming in. Pretty soon we're not going to know anybody. But we have, I mean, Venezuela was so incredible because we did the attack and we kept government totally intact.
So just run that by me again, Mr. President. Who are you going to put in charge? Because you've just said you didn't want somebody as bad as the previous person, and in Venezuela you put in the literal deputy of the previous person.
Well, most of the people we had in mind are dead. So, you know, we had some in mind from that group that is dead. And now we have another group, they may be dead also, based on reports. So I guess you have a third wave coming in. Pretty soon we're not going to know anybody. But we have... I mean, Venezuela was so incredible because we did the attack and we kept government totally intact.
And, of course, one answer to the question of why he has done it brings us back to George Orwell. This is a very fully paid-up member of the Trump fan club, a North Carolina Republican representative called Pat Harrigan.
We've been at war with Iran for 47 years, and whether it was Beirut, the Khobar Towers, U.S. casualties in Iraq and even Afghanistan, it's been a long time for them to go, period.
We have been at war, or Oceania has been always at war with East Asia. If you're not familiar with 1984, that is what these kind of regimes need to do. It doesn't matter who you're at war with, it just matters that you are at war, and you are permanently at war until you're not at war, at which case you claim you've permanently been at war with Eurasia. Or somebody else. We've been at war with Iran for 47 years. So, why has Donald Trump started this war? 0345-6060-973. And crucially, because I think this question is probably easier to answer than the first one, given that the first one almost certainly, as with every question I could ask you about Donald Trump, involves corruption and dishonesty, deception, and weapons-grade disingenuousness. How? Tell me how this ends. 0345-6060-973. Tell me how this ends. And tell me why Donald Trump has done it, given that he doesn't appear to know himself. There's no plan. And any claims that he is doing it with a vision has been blown out of the water by Donald Trump. There's no plan. There's no contingency. There's no idea of who is going to replace the Ayatollah at the head of the Iranian regime because they've accidentally killed all the people that they thought might be suitable candidates. They don't know whether 5 years from now Iran is going to be in a better or a worse situation than it is now, because Donald Trump can't help himself. His verbal diarrhea means that he lets it all out there. Marco Rubio, somewhat more confusingly, decided to give the game away and reveal that they've only got involved militarily, as far as he understands it, because they knew that Benjamin Netanyahu was going to launch a preemptive, unprovoked attack upon Iran, which would lead to an empted, if that's a word, provoked attack upon the United States. So they thought they better get in early and hit the target of an unprovoked attack with no evidence whatsoever that they were planning an attack themselves. And you go back to 1996 when Benjamin Netanyahu started blowing smoke up the world's fundament about the imminence of Iran's nuclear capability. So why have they done it? Why has Trump done it? And how does this end? I have no clue about the second bit. The ballistics weapons program, everybody knows that has no likelihood of reaching the United States. And, of course, given what Netanyahu said in June, it had no likelihood of reaching Israel either, unless he was lying in June. So you've gone to war on a lie, whichever way you dice it, whether it's this war or the last war, one of them was built on a lie. How does it end? 0345-6060-973. And you know, indulge yourself a little bit. Have a not necessarily a complete flight of fantasy. Let's not move into sort of aliens and moon landing type of territory. But in the absence of anything else, that's the thing about vacuums. Anything can move into the space created by a vacuum. 13 minutes after 11 is the time. John's in Bristol. John, what do you reckon?
Oh, hello, James.
Hello, John. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so a bit of a dodge. Anyway, let's go. Why are they doing this? Well, both Netanyahu and Trump are both in big doo-doo domestically, and they're basically two old guys who are clinging on to power to avoid prison or worse. It's the same with Putin. Putin's doing what he's doing in Ukraine, and he's carrying on with it, and to avoid prison or worse. You know,
why
and,
now then?
Why now? Because it's, you know, they're avoiding. They've got to continue. And, you know, what the Israeli regime is doing, they're still going on. They're still, you know, the West Bank being illegally
occupied. Attacks on Lebanon, closing the ways into Gaza, facilitating famine in Gaza, even though 60% of it is under Israeli military control. Doesn't explain why Trump is doing it. Why is Trump doing it now?
Why does he do anything? These are disgusting. But the midterms are coming up, and he's thinking, well, if we can continue, get people to wrap around the flag, you know, that's because it's the oldest playbook in town, right?
You go to war
to preserve your own position.
I get that, but it's not popular. It's not popular in the States. That's the thing that makes me reach for the conspiracy. I perhaps was a little bit Margie yesterday on the Wirral brought Epstein into it, didn't she? Which is where my conspiracy theory antennae started twitching uncontrollably. Maybe I was a little bit unfair to Margie, because I'm going close now. I'm going close to borderline conspiracy theory territory, because nothing else makes sense. The only thing that makes sense is that he's somehow profiting from it. And not just through the increases in the price of oil or kickbacks from defense companies. He's somehow profiting from the entire process. 11:15 is the time.
This is LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:17. So who wouldn't follow this man into war? And here in the clip that follows, he is giving a speech at a ceremony to honour 2 dead American soldiers and 1 still living. Who here would not send their sons and daughters to fight under his flag?
Finally, we honour 1 more American soldier, a fallen warrior of world, of wars, and really a terror.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Finally, we honor 1 more American soldier, a fallen warrior of world, of wars, and really a terror.
Okay, 18 minutes after 11 is the time. A couple of other things that I should have done earlier in the program. On the speech or the comments that he made in the Oval Office yesterday. I've already highlighted how absolutely insane his comments about the Chagos Islands were, with, of course, the caveat that he has already changed his mind several times. Then you've got a comment about windmills. I don't know if you heard this. They've got windmills all over the place that are ruining the country, ruining the landscapes, open up the North Sea, which might be where this meme has begun, the idea that the North Sea is some sort of magic money tree, when in fact it's a degraded and declining basin. But fossil fuels, as I've said to you, all part of the hat trick, the racism, the misogyny, and the climate change denial. Windmills. Why are you obsessed with windmills? I've got no idea. He claims that our energy prices are through the roof. Commercial and domestic electricity supply in the UK do pay higher rates, but it's largely down to our dependence on gas. The UK electricity prices are dependent on gas, itself a fossil fuel. The electricity that's literally generated by the wind and solar is much cheaper. So he should be calling for us to have more wind and solar, not for us to return to more fossil fuels. And then the absolute favourite, the one that comes from all the online racists, you have Sharia courts adjudicating law, which is completely untrue. You have, if you want to call them a Sharia court, you can, but they are more ordinarily referred to as Sharia councils, and they have no legal powers. They cannot adjudicate law. That's why you probably shouldn't call them a court, unless you're trying to stoke up racist hatred. They essentially deal with domestic matters. They do not have any legal power. They are almost identical to Beth Din courts. Again, that word I think misapplied, that Orthodox Jewish people apply to, with matters over which these councils can sit. They do not adjudicate, and they do not have any legal powers. But hey ho, you know, why should the President of the United States care about that when your Uncle Bob on Facebook is telling everybody who'll listen that the Shakira law is the reason why Sadiq Khan got elected Mayor of London? Dylan is in one of my favourite places in the world to answer the question of why this war has even happened at this point in history. Dylan, what would you like to say? I should add where you are. You're in Wales next to the sea. What would you like to say?
Brilliant. James, thanks for everything you do. Absolutely
love
the show.
You're very kind.
You're the only voice of reason in this mad media circus that we seem to have. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So, very quickly, and to coin Winston Churchill, I think this is one of Starmer's finest hours, actually.
Yes.
I only wish he'd go a bit further. But to get back to your question in terms of why this started, I think we've just obviously got to look back over the last 20, 30 years. And it all, we know the Israeli side, which was a view that they should become the hegemon of the Middle East. And everything that has occurred from Iraq through Libya, Afghanistan, et cetera, has been something that has been pushing that strategy. The thing about the US, of course, is that it's become mainstream, and I'm going to say over the last 20, 30 years, through neocons, and I've lived and worked in America for 30 years, that's become mainstream US policy as well. So to try and to understand why it's happening, both sides of the aisle, Democrat, Republican, it won't make any difference whether Trump goes or whether, you know, the midterms return the Democrats. The policy will be the same to support Israel no matter what. So,
well, I mean, I don't dispute that, and you've got the evidence on your side, but there are quite a lot of states in the Middle East now that are much more closely allied with Israel than they are with Iran. I mean, in fact, most of them. And their tradition of neutrality is fast dissolving in the current real politic as well. So, I mean, just for context, it's not a challenge to anything you've said, but you don't really answer the question of why they've done it now. You don't have to. I said you can answer one or both questions. You don't have to answer both questions.
I think the why they've done it now is pretty straightforward. I think this is possibly one of their last chances, particularly in terms of Trump. Who obviously has got a few years left, but also Netanyahu, who's, you know, not going to be around in the next couple of years. And I think this was their opportunity. Iran was always going to be the cherry on top of the cake.
This is the bit that confuses me, because I can see how it plays well for Netanyahu at home, But it doesn't play well for Trump. This is why the how does it end thing is almost hand in hand with the how does it begin or why did it begin? Because it doesn't play well for Trump at home, this. Not just among people who wouldn't trust him to run a bath, let alone a war, but even among MAGA people, you know. There's a lot of anti-Semitism in the ranks of his support, and they find the idea of dancing to Benjamin Netanyahu's tune deeply, deeply offensive. But there's also a lot of America first, you know, a phrase that we first heard when Americans were craving that their government didn't get involved in the Second World War. It's not our fight, it's a European fight. That's what America first meant. Don't get involved in foreign wars. And yet here he is jumping in feet first.
Yeah, well, I think there were two sides to that. I think the MAGA crowd are getting increasingly annoyed because obviously he's gone back on his promise of no new war.
Yeah.
But you've got to...
Why is he doing it? It's not going to deliver an electoral fillip to him in the way that it is to Netanyahu. And that brings us to the most depressing possibility of all, which is that the answer to the question of how this ends is he doesn't know and he doesn't care, which is why I increasingly find myself thinking he's already got what he wanted out of this. It's not an electoral boost. It's not a military victory. It's not a regime change in Iran. What's left? What would count as a win if you were Donald Trump, if you were a mean-minded, morally bankrupt, serial felon, self-confessed sex offender, and greedy, greedy, greedy? What would be a win for you? And he could quite possibly have already got that. Kim's in Harlow. Kim, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Hello, out Kim. Of my comfort zone here, because I normally phone you about dogs. But...
Well, in many ways, these are the dogs of war that we're discussing today.
Yes. Can I just say about windmills?
Yes, please.
The reason he hates windmills is because the Scottish government allowed a wind farm to be built offshore of his golf course in Aberdeenshire, and it spoilt the view. And that's where it comes from.
Well, I never. So who'd have thought that it would be something so petty, vindictive, fact-free and obnoxious? Anyway, that's not why you rang in, but thank you, I remember that.
No, I keep thinking back to that incredible, awful event last year in the Knesset when Trump lauded.
Yes.
After the successful...
There's so much to keep in your mind, isn't there? It was he wasn't just lauded. I mean, it was like some dreadful reality show where somebody's been crowned king of the world.
It was obscene, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And they played exactly to Trump for that. They massaged his ego. They made him out to be a... war hero.
Well, they did that thing that I mean, most people recognize is a terrible catalyst for anti-Semitism, is that they conflated modern Israeli military action with sort of biblical justification or Jewish history and held him up as some sort of figure comparable to great figures from Jewish history. And of course, conflating Israel with all Jewish people is a dangerous and hideous path to go down, unless, of course, in the eyes of many people, unless it's Benjamin Netanyahu doing it. But you're right, Trump was very much on the receiving end of that kind of behaviour.
Yeah, and I think Netanyahu has massaged his ego and offered him another opportunity to stand on the stage in Israel.
Come back to Israel and we'll do it all again. Hey, I'll tell you what, you think we praised you last time? We gave you a good party last time? You wait until you see the one you'll get if you bomb Iran for us. Well, so you've got two theories now. They're both absolutely pathetic and almost certainly one of them is true. Either Netanyahu told him that they were going to do it anyway and they decided that they better get involved because they'd be on the receiving end of the retaliation, so they're on the side of the unprovoked war crime. Or... Yeah. He was fully paid up for it. He wasn't bounced into it by Netanyahu. He was seduced into it. So he was bounced or seduced.
Yeah.
Wow.
We just cannot view Trump through any normal lens. He is his brain is addled by dementia. He is just.
Well, we don't know that. He can't be addled by dementia. I mean, you're joking, aren't you? You're suggesting that he often sounds as if he hasn't got the first idea what he's talking about, or he's completely forgotten what day it is, or what. I mean, you mean this guy?
Finally, we honor one more American soldier, a fallen warrior of world of wars, and really a really terror.
That guy?
What are you talking about? He's just walking Id, and that's all that matters to him, that he's going to be...
I think there's moolah. Honestly, the more we have this conversation and the more that vacuum fails to fill up with plausible or feasible answers, we will never know. That's just an entirely speculative position adopted by me, with no evidence or no backup whatsoever. Whereas yours, that twin choice, he was either bounced into it or seduced into it by Benjamin Netanyahu. You've got an awful lot of evidence for the first suggestion. The first suggestion is Marco Rubio told us. And the second suggestion, Kim's suggestion, as it will go down in history, Kim's explanation as to why this happened is that they promised him another... What would you even call that? You remember what happened when he turned up and they just kind of treated him like beyond royalty, like a religious figure. I don't think that's an exaggeration. And they promised that this time it will be even more sycophantic. They'll be even... Did they give him a prize? They gave him a prize, didn't they? He's got the FIFA Peace Prize. Didn't he get a prize from Netanyahu as well? I'm pretty sure he got a prize. So we've got another prize for you. Imagine if life was that easy. It's like having a four-year-old, isn't it? And if you eat your peas, I'll give you a prize. How old were you before you realised that the prize you got for eating your peas was meaningless? Donald Trump has never realised that the prize he gets for eating his peas, that the peas prize, if you will, is an absolutely meaningless thing. And I still haven't got the answer to the question of whether or not he has to give back the FIFA Peace Prize now that he's started yet another war. Here is Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer will face questions in the Commons shortly over his decisions on the unfolding conflict in Iran. President Trump intensified his criticism of Sir Keir last night for initially blocking the use of UK military bases. Opposition figures here are also criticising the lack of UK military presence in the Middle East. You can hear Prime Minister's questions live and in full with James on LBC from midday. The US military says it's hit almost 2,000 targets in Iran since starting its bombing campaign on Saturday. Opposition politicians there say they're still not satisfied by the Trump administration's efforts to explain its objectives in Iran. Congress will vote tonight to try and stop the military operation continuing without their approval. Some British nationals stranded in the Middle East are due to be flown home tonight. The Foreign Office says the flight will leave Muscat in Oman at 7 p.m. UK time, with the most vulnerable given priority. And one more story for you. The government is to stop issuing study visas for students from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Myanmar and Sudan. The Home Office says there's been widespread abuse and asylum claims have gone up 470% since 2021. LBC weather, staying largely dry and sunny for most. Some patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
AO members get 10% off hundreds of laundry appliances in AO's Big Spin event. Save a load on brands like Hotpoint, Beko and Hoover. Membership also unlocks unlimited free delivery and free recycling of your old appliance. All from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Join now and start saving at AO.com. Verify at AO.com/trust. Membership charged annually at £39.99.
A Thames Link train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Aye. I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 33 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. You know when I bring into the studio things that have happened to me outside the studio, and often it will involve me recommending things to you, telling you to go and shop somewhere, or telling you to go and watch a show or catch a movie. I don't know if you remember me telling you about the date, Sultan. I was strolling nonchalantly through Covent Garden when I was accosted by a lovely young man, whose mum was actually on duty that day as well, whose mum was working on the stall as well. And he introduced me to dates. I'd had dates before. I'd bought them from the supermarket, but I'd not eaten anything like this. And not only did he introduce me to delicious dates, but he lavished me with extremely kind words about this radio show as well. Saeed Usman Shah is the man of whom I speak. And so you can imagine how I felt towards the end of last week when, entirely by accident, and because I'm not really on Twitter anymore, well, I'm not on Twitter at all anymore, I'm not really on social media apart from Blue Sky, I'd managed to completely miss a story involving the date Sultan, or, to give him his real name, Saeed Usman Shah. And Saeed joins me now because it's a horrible story, mate.
Yeah, it is a horrible story, but the thing is, I'm trying to turn it into a positive light.
Good.
I want to fight hate with love, and that's what I went out to do. And what actually happened as a result was it sent my business going viral.
Good.
So I was targeted with some racial abuse.
Well, let's begin at the beginning. In fact, let's begin before the beginning.
Sure.
I want to say something to you, and I don't know how you're going to take it.
Sure.
All right? And you're in a radio studio, probably mm-hmm. for the first time.
Yes.
So that can be quite a nerve-wracking experience.
Mm-hmm.
But when I met you, you were a sort of cheeky chappy. You were super confident. You were bouncing around Covent Garden, selling your wares, introducing me to your mum. You had a touch of the Del Boys about you, if you don't mind me saying so. And albeit that you sell quality produce, unlike the Trotters, your stall regularly is down at Borough Market, where you've become a hugely popular fixture. You seem much shakier to me today, mate.
I wouldn't say I'm shakier. I am taken back.
Yeah.
I am definitely taken back. I'm a little bit exhausted.
Okay.
Whenever I check my phone, I've got like hundreds, if not thousands, of notifications. Some good, some bad. So it is very overwhelming. It is very overwhelming. But I feel like I'm dealing with it pretty well.
Yeah, good. I'm glad to hear it. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted you here. People are going to be wondering what the hell has happened to you. And it begins, of course, with a really wonderful thing. You, as a successful British entrepreneur with stalls now at Borough Market, Old Spitalfields and in Westfield, mm-hmm. down in White City, were approached by Heathrow Airport to feature in an advertising campaign showing Londoners of all different backgrounds and experiences welcoming visitors to London. So you appear in traditional Middle Eastern dress, not unlike what you're wearing today, because you are the date Sultan, so you look like a Sultan.
Yeah.
I mean, crikey, you don't need a PhD in marketing to work this stuff out. On a massive billboard, arriving people at Heathrow see you with your arms out saying, welcome. What could possibly go wrong?
You know, this, I want to put on record, is, for me, it was probably one of the highlights of my career. It was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me, and it happened to me by chance. When Heathrow reached out, I thought it was a pinch me moment. I thought I was being hoaxed. I was like, surely this can't be true. And then to see myself featured there, it was a huge moment for me. My mum and dad called it the happiest day of their life. Like, they couldn't believe that the son was on Heathrow Airport welcoming 90 plus million visitors every single year. Everything was going perfectly fine. Until one day, I'm in bed, and about 4 a.m. I wake up, and I'm getting so many notifications from my friends, family, and from a lot of customers saying, dude, have you seen X? You're going viral. And I thought, wow, this must be great. But then I'm like, what for? And I click on the links, and I see my images have been shared, and I was just being targeted heavily by the far right. I was just taken back because it wasn't something I expected.
What sort of things were they saying, Saeed? Usman.
So it was a sarcastic post saying, can you believe that this is what welcomes us into the UK? And then comments that were coming through was like, why is a brown person there? Why are we celebrating a Muslim? London's been taken over. Rip his images down. There was a lot more worse that was said, and I was horrified by it because I've always found the UK to be a lovely place to live in, and I was never a victim of repetitive racism, Islamophobia, and I was taken back. And the more I scrolled, the more my heart sank.
Wow!
Because I was like, where am I getting this? And people are just judging me based off the skin of, based off the color of my skin, by my name, by the fact that I was a Muslim. And nobody actually took a minute to go and see about the work that I actually do behind the scenes, building the Date Sultan, about the jobs that I've created, how I fight modern slavery. People just made a judgment based off my appearance and start targeting me.
38 successful Londoners used in the campaign, 8 of whom were from ethnic minorities.
Yeah.
One of whom, a successful sportswoman, received so much abuse online that she asked for the posters of her to be taken down. You told them you wanted yours to stay up.
Yeah, so Heathrow have been very supportive. And I get the racial abuse in tranches. And on the latest one, they actually came out and said, hey, Usman, what would you like us to do? If you want, we can take it down. And I said, no, I don't want to take it down. Because I felt that that's the wrong message, the wrong thing for me to do. Rather, I said, you know what? I'm here to showcase that you can be diverse, and the UK is very inclusive. And if you work hard, you can do great things, and don't let the opinions of a few put you down. And I was like, rather than taking my images off, I'm of the opinion, put more of my images up, because I want to inspire the next generation. I want to show people of colour, people of minorities, people of differences, that, you know, this is a great country. If you work hard, you can make it. You will be celebrated. And don't let the opinions of some people cloud your judgment and make you think that this is what the UK represents, because that's not really the case. So, yeah, I said to Heathrow, I want my pictures up. And Heathrow were like, we love your response.
Wow. So do I.
And, James, you know what? I'm happy to share so many emails with you. I've received emails in the hundreds. And I'd say 99% of them have been white English people. And they have told me about how proud they are, how I represent them, how they love the fact that I asked for my pictures not to go down, and how I've stuck to my guns. I've just been blown away by the support that I've got. And it really, really makes me feel proud to be British, because I think that really is British values, the way people support each other.
It's not easy to do what you've done. It's very brave, in fact, to have responded to the abuse by standing prouder. But of course, it's not just you. Your family will see some of the stuff that's been online. I think of your parents and their pride being polluted by this, although I imagine that they don't spend much time on Twitter or social media. But I worry about your wife and how she may have responded to this.
To be honest, everyone was really worried about me.
Yeah.
Because I wear my brand on my sleeve, literally. everyone just really worried about me, that how am I going to take it? And then when just yesterday, I received a comment saying, you made a really bad move by having your image up there, because now you're a target, we'll come find you. And not just that, we'll come find your family. And it's like, when I see things like this, it does it make me feel a bit afraid? Of course it does. And I don't want my family to see things like that, but it does take a mental toll on me. But the thing is, I know majority of these people are keyboard warriors. They sit behind screens and they feel like they can get away with saying such things. So I just try and ignore it.
It's easier said than done. I mean, you know, I do this for a living, and I'm a white bloke. I know what it's like to have your head above the parapet, but not to be the victim of this kind of vicious, personalised racism. But I understand why you're doing it. I understand why you're pushing through.
And then, you know, I really thought about what kind of message do I want to give? What values do I have? What have my parents instilled in me? And what does Islam really teach me? And I wanted to go out and put a message out. And what I did is I said, I'm not going to fight hate with hate. I'm not going to throw a stone back at them. What I did is I put a message out on all of my social media platforms saying, whoever said all this nasty, racist stuff to me, I forgive you. Rather, if you really want to know a little bit more about me and not just judge me off the way that I look, come to Borough Market. I'll give you dates on the house. And then we can just have a conversation and you can get to know Date Sultan behind the scenes. And I just want to put it on record again. I said, I forgive everybody. I hold nothing against nobody because I think life is too short and I don't want to let people's hate bring me down. And I put this message out and literally I never expected it. My post started to go viral. Usually I'd get about 8,000 views on a LinkedIn post. This LinkedIn post got up to 400,000 views.
Lord.
And the amount of support I was getting, like, this guy is dealing with everything with such class. And what actually took me away was I would get phone calls from my staff saying, hey, Usman, you need to get down to Borough Market because there's people here that have come out and they want to meet you.
Wow.
And I got a call saying that there was a lady and she was insisting that she wanted to come out and meet me. So I went to the market and I was greeted to her and she had flowers in her hands. And she said to me that I said some really nasty things about you. Then I read your response and I was like, how can I hate this guy? And she goes, I went away and I read about the work that you do and how you're fighting modern slavery in the world and how you try to bring the best dates for so that the UK public can enjoy the dates. And I was just taken back by all that kind of stuff that you do. And then while she was at my stand, you know, at Borough Market on my menu, I at the bottom of my menu of my prices, I have a message saying, if our dates are too expensive and you're hungry and you can't afford a meal, the dates are free for you. And she goes, this is the guy that I was targeting. She goes, I'm so happy I came here. And then I met her, she gave me flowers. And she's like, I'm really, really sorry. And not just that, people have come out and they come to my stall and they just say, we're just taken back by the guy's response. And
you turned it around.
Yeah, you have to, man. This is what humanity is all about.
And, of course, for anyone confused about why you have no choice but to stay out there, the social media branding, the LinkedIn, the posts, the socials, it's you. I mean, you can't hide from this. You can't do what some people can do and just leave Twitter and stay off socials because you are the Date Sultan. And your business is I mean, it's inseparable. I don't know where Usman finishes and the Date Sultan begins. That's why you're here. We're nearly out of time, but just let me read a few of the messages coming in. This guy makes me proud to be British. He's the epitome of the spirit of this country, an absolute hero and legend. Matt says, good on this fella, Carl. Fair play, Usman. Really giving me the feels today. Keep pushing with the inspirational charge into the future. Clear legend. On behalf of all white, middle-aged, generally angry, overweight men, please apologise to your guest. As always, there are many more of us, says Ryan, than there are of them. Please ask Usman to come to the Abergavenny Food Festival in September. We would definitely welcome a visit. Please pass on our love and hugs to Usman and tell him to get off X and onto Blue Sky. Well, we've just explained why he can't do that. Nigel, proud of you, says Afshan. This guy is amazing, says Abigail. I hate dates, but I love this guy, says Matt in Northampton, to which we'll end the interview by saying he hasn't had the right dates.
No, he hasn't. He needs to get on a train and come to Borough Market and try our dates.
He really does. I have, and they are absolutely delicious. And if you want to find out more about Usman and the work that he does and the dates that he sells, just stick Date Sultan, S-U-L-T-A-N, into your search engine and up you will pop. It's really good to see you, man.
Thank you so much. I'm very thankful to you. Thanks for having me.
No, you're an inspiration to me. It's 11:47.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
How concerned should Sir Keir Starmer be about that conversation and the points made by Donald Trump in the Oval Office?
By the way, I'm not happy with the UK either. This is not Winston Churchill that we're dealing with.
Tony's in Ferrum.
Trump is the same man who ordered his US UN ambassador to vote with Russia, North Korea and Iran against condemnation of the illegal invasion of Ukraine.
Andy is in Dubai.
It wasn't too long ago that Churchill was asking FDR for help during World War II and they didn't come forward with that help. It works both ways.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Whether your dreams involve epic adventure, trying something you've never done before, or just some time to fully relax, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences, thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is, and London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope, being able to raise money for Cancer Research UK.
Step towards a brighter future and sign up at shinewalk.org. Together, we are beating cancer.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw. It's a very personal draw. So you think of a personal way to spend £1 million.
I would hire a hype man so everything I do would suddenly be epic.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw. So
let's go, Kev. Goat cheese bagel for lunch.
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job, your first love, your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our first drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search first drive weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia, movement that inspires.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 10 to 12. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I have got an unhinged headline for you, which actually plays in slightly to the hideous side of Usman's experiences, although I wanted you to hear that story in full because he's turned something hideous into something rather beautiful, as so many of you have recognised. I suppose the best thing you could do in a way would be to either support his work fighting modern slavery or buy some of his dates or both. Simon Marks is in Washington, D.C. I might just shut up for a while, Simon, and give the floor to you.
Well, James, I suppose in many ways the big news of the last few hours is that Secretary of State Marco Rubio has completely walked back and indeed denied ever claiming that it was the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu who was about to go into Iran first, and that is why the United States preemptively had to take action militarily against Iran, because they were concerned that if Israel went in first, reprisals by the Iranians would hit American military targets in the region. He says he didn't say it. We all know he did say it, but the reasons why he says he didn't say it is because his own president, a couple of hours earlier at the White House, insisted that not only was it not Israel that had forced his hand, but actually he forced Israel's hand, because of course he can never admit to playing second fiddle to anyone. I mean, at one point we were reduced yesterday to seeing Manu Raju, the excellent congressional correspondent for CNN, standing next to Marco Rubio and reading back to him verbatim the comments that he had made just 24 hours earlier on Capitol Hill, and Marco Rubio just walking all over him, not allowing him to speak, and basically getting to the point where he said, well, it doesn't matter, because what I'm telling you now is that this was the American president's decision and a determination that this was, you know, the last best option that we had. The other development of the last 24 hours, of course, is that regime change, which was off the agenda on Monday, was put back on the agenda by President Trump yesterday, but when Marco Rubio spoke on Capitol Hill 3 or 4 hours later, it was still off the agenda. So we don't really have any clearer an idea what the reasons were for the timing of the attack, what the objective is, what the end game is. But we do know that Donald Trump certainly is furious with the UK.
It's taken 3-4 days for us to work out where we can land there. It would have been much more convenient landing there as opposed to flying many extra hours. So we are very surprised. This is not Winston Churchill that we're dealing with. UK has been very, very uncooperative with that stupid island that they have, that they gave away and took a 100-year lease, having to do with perhaps indigenous people claiming the island that never even saw the island before. What's that all about? And they ruin relationships. It's a shame.
I mean, that almost sounded at the end there as though he was burying the bilateral relationship between the United States and the UK, as Lord Mandelson's successor, Christian Turner, the new British ambassador here, spends only his second full week in the job. Sir Keir Starmer is no Winston Churchill. We can all debate that. But there's one thing I suspect we can all agree on, and that is that Donald Trump, as many people in my social media timeline were suggesting yesterday, certainly ain't no FDR.
He forgot the name of the island, didn't he?
Yes, of course. Well, at one point, when he started talking about the island, I thought he might be talking about Cyprus.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't clear at all. And then it became apparent that he was once again going on about the Chagos Islands. And there's that point in his appearance yesterday where he refers witheringly to the indigenous people of the Chagos.
Yeah, you could hear it in his voice.
You can hear the
racism. He hates that word, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, he hates those people.
Absolutely. It was astonishing.
Indigenous. You won't know this because you would have been asleep, but we opened the show this morning by explaining that in one way, none of this matters, because tomorrow he could be describing Keir Starmer as the best thing since sliced bread. And yet, of course it matters, because he is the President of the United States of America and Keir Starmer is our Prime Minister. But you remind us that this now holds true across everything. So Rubio says the polar opposite of what he says yesterday and denies that he said yesterday. You move from we are doing regime change to we're not doing regime change to we are doing regime change. The reasons for doing it change. Everything changes, which means nothing ever gets pinned down. Journalistically, it continues to be an almost impossible challenge.
Well, and governmentally, of course, for his partners and allies in Europe, it continues to be an impossible task, because you never know what is going on. It's like trying to pin jelly to the wall here. And
Jell-O.
This military action was launched... Jell-O, yeah, exactly. This military action was launched on Saturday. It's now Wednesday. There is still no cogent explanation here for what the plan is, how this ends. He was musing yesterday about who might end up governing Iran when it became apparent that regime change was back on the table. He doesn't think that the Shah's son quite cuts the mustard, but he is very interested in trying to find someone who is popular in Iran and is already there. I mean, those appear to be the two benchmarks for the next... I mean, you know, if you're popular in Iran and you're already there, come on down, especially if you look like you come from central casting, because, of course, that's why Donald Trump says personally that he's so happy with Hegseth and Dan Kane, his chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That's the plan.
Speaking of Hegseth...
Yes, so there's been a very, very interesting report released by an organization called the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, which, as its name suggests, monitors the separation of church and state and attacks on it within the military. And it has had scores of complaints since this conflict began. One combat unit commander told the Federation that non-commissioned officers at a briefing on Monday said that the Iran war is part of God's plan, and that President Donald Trump was anointed by Jesus to light the signal fire in Iran to cause Armageddon and return his and mark his return to Earth. And they've received scores of complaints from all over the military over the last several days that similar messages are being delivered. And take a listen to what Pete Hegseth said when he was asked on Monday what his prayer is for the troops.
My prayer for them is that I do pray for them. My wife prays for them. Our family prays for them. Our cabinet prays for them. None of this is done on a whim. Having been in their boots, having been in their shoes, having been in their flight suits, I know we think about them with every decision that we make and every recommendation that we make to the President of the United States. Those recommendations are made prayerfully. And when I pray every day for them and for this mission, I pray simply for the biblical wisdom to see what is right and the courage to do it.
So as we engage in a plan to topple a theocracy in Iran, we are praying for the biblical wisdom to do it the right way.
Simon Marks, thank you. Must be a different Bible from the one I read. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife or daughter. Thou shalt not kill. That's just four off the top of my head. I imagine the other six might be pertinent as well. But we are out of time. Natasha Clarke is here, LBC's political editor, to tee up a PMQs that, it should be quite interesting, shouldn't it?
It's always going to be interesting, especially...
Don't be ridiculous.
Oh, it is. I think
people have
be...
listened to previous ones, Natasha.
Okay, it's going to be a great PMQs, I think. And as you were just speaking about with Simon, it's obviously going to be, I think, dominated by the special relationship and Iran. It can't not be, surely. The attacks from Donald Trump that we saw yesterday and some of the comments that you just heard Simon play out there, and in those interviews that he's done over the past few days with some other media outlets, quite astonishing. You know, we've talked about this before, haven't we, about how we both feel that the special relationship has now cooled. And I remember, you know, when Donald Trump first got into the White House, you were one of the people saying that you think that he's going to totally waste all of this political capital by doing so, by cozying up to him. And there are many MPs in Parliament that now feel they've been totally, totally vindicated by what Donald Trump has done. For Kemi Badenoch's perspective, I wonder whether she'll, you know, be the statesman woman Kemi Badenoch.
There's a
first time for everything. I doubt it. Will she talk about prescribing the IGC? That's been something that she's been keen for the government to do. But I think she's probably going to talk about the Chagos Islands and Diego Garcia. She will see this as a vindication of her approach to these islands and to the deal that Donald Trump now says he doesn't want to do. And she will now sort of talk about, I think, why she feels that these islands are so important and why she feels like we should never be giving them away in the first place. So I think that'll come up.
Again, without mentioning that it was the conclusion of a negotiating process started by herself.
I'm sure she won't mention that either.
Her party. I think Liz Truss was one of the big architects of what has transpired. James Cleverly heavily involved in the negotiations. But I mean, I actually find this a bit depressing, Tash, to be honest with you, because you listen to what Marco Rubio has done. They're literally denying that he said what he said yesterday on tape. They have the tape. They have him saying it. He says, no, I didn't. And even if I did, it doesn't matter because I'm saying something else now. And that idea that we're a little bit better than that disappears, really, when people like Badenoch stand up to attack a treaty that is a direct consequence of about, my understanding, 85 to 90% of it was done under the Tories and the signatures were added under Labour. But
sure,
it won't stop her from trying to score weird political points. I mean, anything else? The spring statement, will that get? I mean, unemployment not looking good. And of course now, anything that came out in the spring statement yesterday, not that Badenoch will make this point, gets thrown up in the air by the events in the Middle East and the economic impact potentially thereof.
Yeah, completely does. She might go on welfare spending. That's expected to go up £16 billion a year and reach £407 billion by 2030. And also, where are we going to find the money to spend the 3.5% on defence? I was listening to someone from the IFS earlier who basically said that that means tax rises or huge spending cuts. So the government are going to have to talk about that at some point. Maybe Kemi Badenoch will raise that. Ed Davey as well, we should mention.
He had a weird week, didn't he? I mean, I'm no fan of people who have moved to Dubai because they claim London is a war zone.
It's an interesting one.
But to focus on how, I mean, and he's probably right, if you did move there to avoid tax, it's a little bit rich to expect much less wealthy taxpayers to pay to get you out of there. But it was an odd line to go down. We shall wait and see what he has to say. Ben's been in touch, Tash. You'll like this. I can't wait for Kemi to claim that the war was all her idea.
Yeah,
never say never.
Might do that.
We will cross live to the House of Commons, of course, as soon as the leader of the opposition gets to her seat. Do we have any flavour of what the feeling behind her is? Tories, I mean, they're a weird party now.
But the
phrase gung-ho doesn't always apply to everybody on those benches. Some people will recognise that Starmer has threaded a needle when it comes to detaching himself from the initial action while successfully defending our interests and our territories, or at least preparing to defend them. But will there be Tory support at all for Starmer's position, or are those days behind us?
Oh, I think there will be. And okay, listening to some of the MPs in the chamber on Monday when he was giving his statement, the long shadow of Iraq and Afghanistan hangs over the entire House of Commons chamber, and there are lots of Conservative MPs that privately, I think, agree with Keir Starmer's more cautious position. And, you know, you can see that. Only Israel has joined this action. It goes something to say that, you know, the US has a lot of allies all around the world, and only one of them decided to join in this action. So I think there will be people that will privately agree with Keir Starmer.
But not publicly?
Potentially not. I mean, to be fair, I can't remember if anybody disagreed publicly with Kemi Badenoch's statement, but there were Tory MPs in the House of Commons on Monday who were saying, absolutely, we shouldn't be joining this military action. So there will be that. I wonder if Ed Davey will also raise the idea of a vote on military action, a vote on using these bases. Interestingly, Jeremy Corbyn's just tabled a bill to require parliamentary approval for the foreign use of military bases. I wonder how much support that will get. I imagine the left of the Labour Party, lots of backbenchers, would privately support that as well.
Okay, so I mean, there's a lot on the table, but not necessarily a lot that will transpire during PMQs. We'll just wait to see whether or not Kemi Badenoch decides to reflect, if you like, a sort of national unity at a time of potential crisis, or whether
it's unlikely.
Give her the benefit of the doubt, personally. Yeah. You never know.
I think she should, and I think it would be beneficial for her and the party to do so. But she will also probably want to touch on the idea of the special relationship, which clearly is waning, clearly is cooling down. But actually, again, speaking to MPs, many of them are quite happy to see Keir Starmer start to stand up to Donald Trump in this way, especially after those military comments, which I know you came back to earlier this week, which, you know,
In January. 454 dead British men and women.
A lot of people.
Oh, here we go. Let's see what she does.
Mr. Speaker, can I pay tribute to our brave servicemen and women in the Middle East during this very difficult period?
Yeah.
Our bases in Cyprus and Bahrain have now been attacked. The US has taken offensive action to destroy missile launch sites to defend British territory.
Yeah.
Why will the Prime Minister not allow the RAF to do the same?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, can I make clear, this is obviously an extremely serious situation, and I know the whole country is worried about the potential for escalation.
That's right.
They're worried about the impact on their lives, particularly when they see what's happening with energy. The family and friends of those who are caught in the region will be worried sick about them. And, of course, we've got civilians and military personnel at risk in the region. We need to act, therefore, with clarity, with purpose, and with a cool head. The protection of UK nationals is our number one priority. And we're taking action to reduce the threat, with planes in the sky in the region intercepting incoming strikes, deploying more capability to Cyprus and allowing US planes to use UK bases to take out Iran's capability to strike. What I was not prepared to do on Saturday was for the UK to join a war unless I was satisfied there was a lawful basis and a viable thought-through plan. That remains my position.
That wasn't the question I asked him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody wants to see an escalation. The fact is...
Yes.
The fact is, Mr. Speaker, our bases, in case they don't realise, our bases have already been attacked. Iran
is trying to kill our servicemen and women. He is catching arrows rather than stopping the archer. That's what we're talking about. Why is he asking our allies to do what we should be doing ourselves? We are, I would say to Labour MPs, we are in this war whether they like it or not. What is the Prime Minister waiting for?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, let me give a little more detail, because for a number of weeks now, we've been pre-deploying our capabilities to the region. In doing so, we've been liaising very closely with the United States, as the House would have expected. Therefore, radar systems were pre-deployed, ground-based air defence was pre-deployed, counter-drone systems were pre-deployed, and F-35 jets were pre-deployed. Mr. Speaker, that is why, since Saturday morning, multiple F-35s and Typhoons have been in operation not just in the Middle East, but across Cyprus. Further missions were flown overnight, Typhoons defending in particular Qatar, and F-35s defending other regional partners. We're resupplying our air defence missiles today. Wildcat helicopters with anti-drone capabilities will be in Cyprus this week, and HMS Dragon will be deployed to the Mediterranean. And, of course, in agreement with the US, they're using our bases to conduct the operations to strike Iranian missiles and launchers. Mr. Speaker, that is the action that we are taking. That is the agreement that we've reached with the United States to protect our nationals.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister has read out a long list. It is not enough. He says that we are pre-deploying. The one ship which we are sending, HMS Dragon, is still in Portsmouth. The fact is the Type 45s cannot take out incoming missiles. This is not enough. He's read out a long list. The people who understand know it is not enough. He should be doing more. Yesterday, the Chancellor could have given more money to defence. Instead, I don't know why they're laughing. I don't know why that's funny. Yes, not funny. Yesterday, the Chancellor could have given more money to defence. Instead, she gave more money for welfare. Their priorities are all wrong, Mr. Speaker. Their priorities are all wrong. They can chanter as much as they like. The fact of the matter is that the war in Iran is happening now.
Order. Mr. Bailey, I don't like that. I don't think it becomes you either. An officer and gentleman, I expect more. Come bed on.
The fact of the matter, Mr. Speaker, is that the war...
I don't need... I can lip read as well. So please, let's learn something. If not, you'll learn the way out. Come bed on.
Mr. Speaker, the country is not going to be distracted by Labour MPs moaning. The fact of the matter is that the war in Iran is happening now. But the OBR say the government won't hit 3% on defence for 5 years. The war is happening now. There is no urgency from the Prime Minister. Why is he leaving the job of funding our armed forces to the next government?
Prime Minister.
I'm not going to take lectures on defence from the party opposite. They came into office, and what did they do? They cut the defence budget. They missed army...
Order. Mr. Philp, you've moved from there to there. You're even louder here, so I think twice.
Prime Minister. Not only did they cut the defence budget, they missed army recruitment targets every year for 14 years. They left morale in our armed forces an all-time low, and our forces hollowed out. That's the words of Ben Wallace, the former Defence Secretary. Labour, by contrast, are delivering the biggest boost to defence spending since the Cold War. £270 billion over this Parliament. And we're doing that because we're focused on what matters. And she's right. The war is, of course, happening now. We have to focus on that. Across the country, people are worried about those that are trapped in the region. And, Mr. Speaker, that is why we're taking action. And I can update the House that yesterday more than 1,000 British nationals arrived back in the UK on commercial flights from the UAE. A further 8 flights are due to leave the UAE to the UK today. I can confirm, Mr. Speaker, that the first charter flight is expected to leave Oman later today, and 2 more will come in the coming days. I can the country really does want to know this. I'm sorry. Family and friends are worried sick about people who are caught out. I will not be put off. I can announce, Mr. Speaker, we will lay on additional charter flights in coming days. British Airways are now laying on an extra flight from Oman, and the Foreign Secretary will have further discussions today. And can I urge all those in the House who have constituents who are caught in this to make sure that they do register their presence so we can do whatever we can to help them get home safely.
Mr. Speaker, I wasn't asking about evacuations. I was asking about defence spending. He needs to focus on the question he's being asked, not the statement that was prepared in the bunker. He stands there telling us that he's spending more money on defence. They're saying it. No, he isn't. In fact, they are cutting defence spending by £2.6 billion from the MOD budget this year. And that's why there are no Royal Navy warships in the Middle East, Mr. Speaker. In June last year, he should ask his defence secretary for the numbers, because that is what's happening. In June last year, Mr. Speaker, the government promised that its plan for funding our armed forces would be ready by autumn. In autumn, they promised it would be ready by the end of 2025. It is March 2026 and still nothing. So can the Prime Minister tell the House when his defence investment plan will finally be published?
Prime Minister.
Well, I'm sorry she's not interested in how people caught in the region are going to get home. I think for the vast majority of people watching this PMQs, that'll be the single most important thing on their mind. They cut defence spending, we're increasing defence spending. And we're doing that, Mr. Speaker, because we've stabilised the economy. Yesterday, the Chancellor announced inflation was down, interest rates down, borrowing down, debt down, investment, living standards growth up. Now, I know the Leader of the Opposition doesn't understand that. The Shadow Chancellor clearly doesn't understand that. Although I do have to thank him that in what's been a very difficult week, he provided some excellent, unintended stand-up comedy in his response to the Chancellor yesterday.
Mr. Speaker, he doesn't want to talk about the defence investment plan because he doesn't know. He doesn't know what is going on any policy, so he reads statements that are pre-prepared, irrespective of the question, and the whole country can see it. The truth is that because they spent money on welfare, there is no defence investment plan. Because there is no defence investment plan, they are not ordering enough missiles. The fact is that this crisis goes beyond defence spending. They can chant as much as they like. They are pathetic. Spending money on welfare instead of defence spending. Sorry, Mr. Speaker. They're not just pathetic. They are also weak. This crisis goes beyond defence spending. It is also about the cost of living. This war is interrupting the supply of oil and gas. That is driving up the cost of petrol and making it more expensive to heat our homes. Yet he is stopping drilling in the North Sea while importing the same oil and gas from Norway. Does he think that at a time of geopolitical crisis, it makes sense to kill our oil and gas industry and give up that ready supply of energy?
The question of the energy supply right now is a serious question, and we are doing all we can with allies to make sure that that is preserved. And it's vital that we keep trade flowing through the Straits of Hormuz, Mr. Speaker. The Energy Secretary met the International Energy Agency yesterday, and the Chancellor is meeting oil and gas companies today. We're keeping in close contact with our allies and key industry players. Again, I think the country wants to know what we're doing now in relation to what's happening in coming days. Mr. Speaker, oil and gas will be part of our energy mix for many years to come. But if Ukraine and the last few days have taught us anything, it is that all the time we're on the international market, we are vulnerable to these changes. That is why renewable energy, where we have our independence and security, would take us off those markets and give us the security that we need.
Speaker, the Prime Minister again does not understand the energy transition. You do not need to stop drilling in oil and gas to get renewables. This is basic stuff. He doesn't understand his policy. He's got a sea of orcs and goons who have no idea how anything is working at all. Mr. Speaker. They can complain all they like, Mr. Speaker. The fact is, they are letting down the people out.
Order. You can't do a point of order in the middle of Prime Minister's question.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, the situation in Iran shows this Prime Minister has the wrong priorities. When it comes to defence, it's someone else's job. When it comes to welfare, they find the money. When our bases are attacked, they call the lawyers. When our energy security is under threat, they stop drilling in the North Sea. Mr. Speaker, the truth is, Mr. Speaker, after last week's by-election, they might not like to hear it, but they are going to hear it, Mr. Speaker, whether they like it or not. Is it not the truth that he is prioritizing his job security over our national security?
Mr. Speaker, I spent the week protecting British lives and our national interests. And Mr. Speaker, moments like this define a leader of the opposition. They can either step up, act in the national interest and show that they're fit to be Prime Minister, or they can expose their utter irrelevance. She has chosen the second.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I thank the Prime Minister for his leadership and his cool head on the situation in Iran? Prime Minister, the leasehold system is legalised extortion. Yeah. Last week, I met with dozens of my constituents, their leaseholders and their tenants' residents associations. They're all telling me the same story. Every single month, they're paying hundreds of pounds while their service charges keep skyrocketing. They're trapped between bad managing agents and a system that is broken. Can the Prime Minister tell me what this Labour government is doing to right this wrong once and for all?
Yeah. Prime Minister. Well, I know my honourable friend has been fighting for her constituents and holding management companies to account. Our reform bill will end the broken, outdated leasehold system and make the dream of home ownership real. Mr. Speaker, we're capping ground rents, delivering transparency on service charges, and scrapping the presumption that leaseholders pay landlords legal costs. Our focus is on saving people money and giving them more control of their home and creating a fairer housing system.
Sir Ed Davey, leader of the Liberal Democrats.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I associate myself with the Prime Minister's remarks on Sarah Everard and the need to do far more to tackle violence against women and girls? And can I also associate myself with the Prime Minister's remarks on Iran? As we rightly debate how to make tax exiles pay their fair share, it is absolutely right that the government does everything it can to get all British citizens to safety. Mr. Speaker, experts are warning that families could see their energy bills rise by £500 a year as a result of Trump's illegal war. But millions of families and pensioners are already struggling to keep their heads above water thanks to years of a cost of living crisis. When Putin invaded Ukraine, he and I campaigned for months to get the Conservatives to act on energy bills.
What?
This time, will the Prime Minister save families that anxiety and give a cast iron guarantee today that he will not let energy bills rise by £500 this year?
Prime Minister.
Can I thank him for raising this, because I know this will be a concern to the public. who are watching what's going on and very concerned about the impact it will have on their lives. It is important that I emphasise the actions we've been taking urgently this week with our allies, with the energy agencies across the world, and the work we're doing to make sure there's safe passage for energy across the world. We will continue to do that. I was glad that we were able to bring energy price bills down by £150 announced just the other day. We will keep a very close eye on this. I do know how important it is for the British public.
Sir Ed Davey.
Well, I thank the Prime Minister for his reply, but I hope he will act if energy bills do go up by £500. Mr Speaker, Donald Trump's war on Iran has not only brought more chaos across the Middle East, it's increased the threat to our national security here at home. Iran's Revolutionary Guard has previously plotted several failed terrorist attacks in the UK, targeting Iranian journalists, British Jews, and members of this House. Now they are more desperate and dangerous than ever. We've called for the IRGC to be proscribed as terrorists for years. The last government failed to do it, and so has his. So will the Prime Minister table emergency legislation to better protect our country from Iranian terrorists? Will he do it this week?
Prime Minister.
Can I just, again, thank you for raising this. It is very important, I say to the House, that as he would and the House would expect, we are working 24/7 on dealing with any threats to this country. And I spoke on Monday about the 20 Iran-backed threats that we had successfully dealt with, and we continue to do so, and we're working on it 24/7. So it's important that I say that. In relation to the IRGC, obviously we've put in place a number of sanctions already. We don't comment on prescription, but we have made the case that there needed to be legislation to deal with state-backed terrorist groups, and we're looking into that.
Sam Richmond.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. The
executive decision time. We'll skip the adverts here because that PMQs went on rather longer than usual for reasons that everybody except Kemi Badenoch seems to understand. This is a moment of epic national significance and importance. I think, and I'm just looking, well, let me make sure we choose carefully. I don't want to go. David Alan Green, one of my favourite commentators on social media, and used to work for a Conservative MP many moons ago. A few weeks ago, the Leader of the Opposition did well on Mandelson at PMQs, and with equal fair open-mindedness, one can say that this PMQs is one of the very worst performances by any Leader of the Opposition. James Ball of the New World points out that she's trying to pressure on Iran, but feels like she's entirely ignoring the answers in order to stick to a bizarre script. And the callousness of saying, I wasn't asking about evacuations, looked indifferent and callous when UK citizens are being evacuated from the regions. I'm also hearing, Natasha, but I, as you know, have the best listeners in the history of phone-in radio, Tom and Ash and others, suggesting that she got her facts completely wrong when it comes to the missile capabilities of Type 45 destroyers. But I don't know if Tom and Ash are entirely reliable on this.
I think Tom is reliable on this, James, because I've been told exactly the same by somebody from within government. So Kemi, according to them...
Well, the MOD.
The Ministry of Defence. Right. Say that Kemi is getting her facts wrong on the Type 45s. And it's true, they can shoot down missiles. They already have done so. Keir Starmer did say earlier this week that they'd already been involved in shooting some drones that they believed
were on the way. In fact, they were criticised because the drones were cheap and the missiles were really expensive. But anyway, and then she moves effortlessly to claiming that other people don't know what they're talking about or don't understand. That was bad.
She didn't... Her tone was all wrong for a week like this, wasn't it? And I think we sort of knew that was going to be the case from the start. We maybe hoped it would be a little bit better. And also you heard from Keir Starmer that sort of bit of a snark in his voice as well, saying, could you please kind of quiet down there. People really want to hear this.
Yeah.
And people did want to hear this.
And she said they didn't. That's not what I didn't ask about that. I don't care about people, how we're going to evacuate British citizens from the Middle East.
Yeah, and usually what she's doing in there is saying, Keir Starmer, you're not answering the question. I think people do get frustrated with Keir Starmer for not asking the question. But on a day like this, absolutely not. People are very interested in what the government is doing. And I am surprised that she didn't ask a question about what is the government doing to evacuate those tens of thousands of people that could be stuck. And Keir Starmer actually confirmed today that we didn't know, I think, that another two chartered government planes will be leaving Oman as well. So that's new information.
In many ways, he's at his best and she's at her worst at times like this.
I think so, yeah. Keir Starmer absolutely, you know, needed, I think, this moment to sort of come back on the front foot from what was a very bruising by-election last week. And he does. He comes into his own on the world stage. He is good at foreign affairs. He is good at responding to world events internationally. And he said in PMQs then, you know, these events, this is what makes a leader of the opposition. This is what we, you know, can confer from her. But absolutely the same of him, right? That he's trying to set up himself as I'm the statesman and you are not. You are not deserving of this role to be prime minister. And that's arguably what he is showing that he is best at. And many Labour MPs, I think, will agree with him that what we want to see from Keir Starmer and what we want to see from him is going a little bit harder on Donald Trump, going a little bit further.
As we've talked about previously, MPs on both sides of the House will feel, all three, well, I don't suppose that the reform outfit will be pleased that they're standing up to Donald Trump, because when he says jump, they just squeal how high. Another thing that confused me, even as she was lecturing everybody else on not understanding things, was how she could claim that she was opposed to escalation while condemning Keir Starmer for not escalating.
She wants escalation. She wants the government
to do more. But
then
she said she didn't.
No. Okay. No, she keeps saying she wants the government to do more, and she wants us to go. She's saying the government aren't doing enough. So, yeah, that's a bit of a confusing line for her there. But really, is this really what people want to hear about? Is this really what people want to know? Keir Starmer...
No, it's a day for facts, isn't it? It's like a public service broadcast, PMQs at a time of military engagement
or
war.
And Sir Ed Davey, I think, was bang on when he was asking about energy bills. That is exactly what people are worried about today. How is the oil prices? How is this going to actually affect me on the street? And that is exactly what he did. And she did start to talk about that at the end of PMQs, didn't she, when she was sort of asking about what the government's doing on that. But it fell to Ed Davey, I think, to ask the questions that people want to hear today.
Gosh. That's almost it, really. I brought it in on time, but as you say, the opportunity for a little bit of unity, a little bit of national interest, the kind of wartime spirit. I wonder if Kemi Badenoch even knows that during times of war you often have cabinets made up of people from all the political parties in the House of Commons, rather than allowing partisanship or the pursuit of cheap political points to be prioritised over the welfare of, most obviously, British military personnel, but on this occasion, the welfare of British citizens caught up in a war zone. Although, as a consequence of one British citizen being caught up in a war zone, I do actually have an unhinged headline that I feel I should share just before we head towards the news. So I think we've got time. Have we got time for a little unhinged? All right, I'll be very, very quick.
Unhinged headline.
Nick Candy, who I think appears in the Epstein files and is also treasurer of Nigel Farage's political outfit. Why, even as missiles fly over my head, I feel safer in Dubai than in Sadiq Khan's London. Just when you think these people can't get any madder or any more bent double by the fact that the mayor of London is brown and a Muslim, up pops Nick Candy, a feature of the Epstein files and the treasurer of Nigel Farage's latest outfit, to claim that he feels safer in the middle of an actual war zone than he does in his multi-million pound Knightsbridge apartment.
Unhinged headline.
Matt Hewitt has your headlines.
The Prime Minister says the government will lay on more charter flights to bring British nationals home from the Middle East. The first leaves Oman this evening. Speaking at Prime Minister's questions in the last few minutes, Sir Keir Starmer defended the speed of sending the military to the region, saying radar systems, anti-drone technology and F-45 jets had been pre-deployed. He rebutted the Conservative leader's accusation that defence spending is rising too slowly, saying the Tories cut the defence budget. Israel has launched fresh strikes in Iran and Lebanon on day 5 of the war in the Middle East. Tehran's attacked the US embassy in Dubai and an airbase in Saudi Arabia. And one other story, three men have been arrested in London and Wales on suspicion of spying for China. The Metropolitan Police say the suspects are aged 39, 43 and 68. LBC weather, staying largely dry and sunny for most, patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, highs of 8 to 16 degrees.
Call LBC now, 0345 6060973. Text 84850.
Whether your dreams involve an adventure, trying something you've never done before, or just some time to fully relax, you can bank on Lloyds to make it happen. And thanks to Lloyds, here's your chance to win one of three aspirational breaks, with spending money, enabling you to try something new. Head to lbc.co.uk for your chance to win. I'm James O'Brien. It's 12:31.
This is LBC.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern. Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:34 is the time. A few of you mentioned yesterday that you hadn't actually heard anywhere else. I have to be clear, it was reported in The Guardian that Israel had closed all entry points into Gaza and that many charities and international organisations were warning that famine was imminent. It occurred to me that if food and convoys aren't getting in, then quite possibly medics and medical equipment aren't either. So I thought we'd catch up with the consultant plastic surgeon, Victoria Rose, who you've met on a few occasions on this programme. Victoria works for Guy's and St Thomas's and Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, but has also made a number of trips to Gaza to provide absolutely essential treatment to people in absolutely dire straits. Before we catch up with the here and now, Victoria, a little word for people who haven't met you before on the kind of work that you do when you go to war zones like Gaza.
Well, I'm a trustee of Ideals, which is a doctor's charity that's been going to Gaza since about 2009. But since the war, what we've been doing basically is sending teams in to assist the local doctors and nurses in Gaza. So we've been in the European Gaza Hospital before it was bombed, and since it was taken out of action, we've been mainly at Nasser Medical Complex. We're operating every day that we're there. We normally send an orthopaedic surgeon, a plastic surgeon, and an anaesthetist, and we've been mainly dealing with children's injuries as a result of the ongoing war. Since the ceasefire, we're trying to get through the backlog of patients, really.
What sort of injuries are we talking about?
We're mainly talking about burns, blast and gunshot injuries. So obviously the blast injuries can be anything from the blunt force of the explosion throwing you against a blunt sort of wall or building, damaging the body. But then there's all of the shrapnel wounds that you see. So when the explosion goes off, things are sort of whipped up in that initial blast and then ejected at very high velocities, and those hit people and amputate arms and legs and penetrate abdomens and heads and that sort of thing. And then you have burns from the heat of the explosion, but also from the fires that the explosion starts.
We'll talk a little, if we may, about your personal situation. We've talked before about how hard it has been for you to get into Gaza, and you expressed some concern to me that by talking about how hard it is to get into Gaza, it may actually become even harder for you personally to get into Gaza. I hope that hasn't come to be true?
I'm not sure, really. We still haven't managed to get back since we left in June of last year. We tried in October 2025 and then we tried again in December 2025. And as a charity, we've sort of decided that we will, myself and Graham, who's also been denied three times, that we will take a pause. We have a very lovely human rights lawyer in Israel who has taken up our case along with another 50 doctors who have been denied.
Did they give you a reason for being denied?
No, and that's what the case is about. Under their own law as well as international law, they have to give us a reason why they're denying us access to another country. So that is what she is appealing COGAP for.
Why is it so important to have medics like you in there to help the local medics?
Well, I think they are depleted. Obviously, a huge number of healthcare workers were killed and then detained during this war. We know that 587 have actually been verified as killed during the war, and there's at least another 500 being investigated. But there's still about 127 being detained. So they are very short on the ground of doctors and nurses. So assistance from the international community is vital, considering the huge patient load that they have to deal with.
I should add that COGAT has not responded to LBC for comment. So, I don't want to tempt you into undue speculation, but do you think your own refusals are born of some of the interviews you've given and some of the things you've done outside the operating theatre?
I don't know for sure, but I'm fairly confident it hasn't helped. But looking at the doctors that have been denied, they all seem to be doctors who have been at least once before. It's very unlikely that a doctor is denied entry if they've never been in before.
Wow.
And
what else do we know about medical equipment getting in? I mean, I reported yesterday and I was thinking primarily, Victoria, about food, actually, because the charities and NGOs were warning about famine. But, of course, now that you're here, it occurs to me that the medical equipment can't get over
clinical
either.
We've been talking to our colleagues at the NASA Medical Complex, and they are now 52% of their essential medicines, so that's things like antibiotics and painkillers, are at zero stock. And about 72% of their disposable items are at zero stock. So that's gloves, gowns, swabs, those sorts of things. But there's been huge delays getting equipment into Gaza at the moment. Israel have a dual list. Items can be on a dual list. So if Israel deems that they could be used as weapons or in any way to aid Hamas or any other terrorist organizations, then they're not let in. And unfortunately for us, a lot of our medical equipment could be deemed as a weapon, even things from scissors to scalpels to the drills that we use to put in plates in the long bones and fractures that we fix. So we face a huge difficulty getting equipment in. We've got quite a few suitcases full of orthopedic equipment still waiting at Al Arish to get in, and the WHO have been trying to assist us, but they don't seem to be able to get it in. At the moment, tent poles are on the dual item list, so we're not confident that we're going to be able to get drill bits over the line.
No. Just a word, if you would, on why you think they might discriminate against medics who've been before in favour of medics who haven't been at all. So some of my listeners would have picked up on what you just said.
I can't say for sure, but it is very clear when we go that the doctors who have been before are far more useful than the ones that have never been. It's a bit like hitting the road running. If you've been, you know what to expect. You're mentally prepared, physically prepared, and you can really make a start as soon as you get there. People that have never been before often take a few days to acclimatise to the workload, to the environment, and it's a slower, less effective start for them.
So, I mean, as you say, we can't know for sure, but what the reality of this decision is, or this distinction is that the most effective doctors are being denied entry.
Yeah, I think the most effective doctors are definitely being denied entry.
I may tempt you outside your field of direct expertise, so don't answer this if you don't want to or if you can't, but could we have hoped, perhaps forlornly, that any of this would be covered in the so-called ceasefire arrangements and deal?
I think we had hoped that getting medical equipment in would have been part of the restructuring of the healthcare service in Gaza. I don't think we were expecting this much difficulty. Even things like X-ray equipment is being blocked at Al-Arish, at Rafah now. So it's very difficult to rebuild these hospitals. Most of them, I think there's one MRI scanner functioning in Gaza at the moment, no CT scanners. And we have this equipment at the border, but we cannot get it across.
That's incredibly frustrating.
Yes.
What do we know about the bigger picture? Because the world spotlight, partly understandably, partly rather hard to understand, albeit that the impossibility of foreign journalists getting into the territory because of Israeli rules remains in place. What do we know about the bigger picture, about the general welfare of the Palestinian people in Gaza?
Well, we know that all the humanitarian missions have been stopped, so there's a convoy every Tuesday and every Thursday normally. And since Friday, there's been no movement at all. We've had a message today that tomorrow's convoy is cancelled. There is hope that a convoy may go ahead on Saturday, depending on the political situation. But if they're not letting humanitarian workers in, and that's not just doctors, that's the WHO and all the United Nations workers, it's very unlikely that we're going to get food transportation across the border either. So we are, I think the UN are right, we are looking at further food insecurity in Gaza.
Do you think you'll ever go back?
I do, yes.
You have to think that.
Yeah.
It can drives the work that you continue to do.
Yeah, we'll definitely get back at some point.
How can people help support the work that you're doing, Victoria?
Oh, well, any donations to the charity would be hugely appreciated. We're supported by Islamic Help, but our own charity, Ideals, would be very appreciative of any support that can be given. I'd also encourage people to keep lobbying their MPs. Do try and keep Gaza in the public eye. There is a huge concern from all humanitarian workers that while our eyes are on other areas, the situation will decline in Gaza.
And of course Israel now attacking Lebanon as well, in response to Hezbollah missiles. Andrew sent a message that resonates with me. I don't know what you'll make of it. In a land with no journalists, the doctor has become the journalist. There are journalists in Gaza. It's just foreign organisations that aren't allowed to send people in, but it is people like you, Victoria Rose, who become the only conduits for getting information out, never mind getting medical assistance and professional medics in.
Yeah, it's not what we thought we would be doing, but it has become quite an important part of our work. I think, though, as a doctor, there is a responsibility to protect healthcare systems as well as patients worldwide, so we all feel this need to say what we've seen.
And I'm grateful to you for finding some time to tell my listeners what you have seen and what the latest is on a saga, a hideous scenario, which, as you say, isn't attracting the same levels of attention that it was even previously. And even then, of course, they were inadequate. Victoria Rose, consultant, plastic surgeon, also treated a surprising number of my listeners. I don't know how many operations you get through in the average day, but there's always a few getting in touch to pass on personal thanks. Farah, I think you know,
yes,
she's been at great pains to meet her. And there's a couple of ankles in there as well. Okay. But Victoria Rose, thank you. It is 12:40.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The Prime Minister sticks to his guns over Iran. Donald Trump says Keir Starmer is no Churchill. But if Iran is the question, is a Churchillian response even the answer? Nigel Farage says yes.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone
around walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
It's a celebration of life and it gives hope, being able to raise money for Cancer Research UK.
Step towards a brighter future and sign up at shinewalk.org. Together, we are beating cancer.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
It's 12:47. The Security Minister, Dan Jarvis, currently giving a statement in the House regarding the arrest of three men on suspicion of spying for China. The Guardian has reported that one of them is the partner of a sitting Labour MP and another one is a former MP. So more on that as and when it happens. But two incredibly important matters. Henry Reilly was bouncing around the studio when I arrived at work this morning because he had been informed that a major announcement would be made by Reform UK at yet another press conference. I think they currently call about seven a day. And I presume, Henry, that your excitement was justified.
Well, as you say, this was billed as a major announcement. And it was a defection, which Reform obviously, you know, got form on.
It's got to be Susan Hall then, if it's major announcement and it's London politics, it's got to be Susan Hall, mate.
Well, it's two defectors. Sir Robin Wales,
who
was former mayor of Newham.
Oh.
And Clive Furness, who was a councillor in Newham, both former Labour.
That's a press conference worthy double of, defection, is it?
There was Leila Cunningham, the mayoral candidates, Nigel Farage and the two defectors.
Right.
Just take a listen. One of the defectors is a man called Clive Furness, who I mentioned, who was the councillor in Newham. And he had this to say about his new party, Reform UK.
Now, sorry about this, Nigel, but respect is not perfect. But they are speaking, and they are the only people who have been speaking, to the issues affecting the British public. In Leila, we have a candidate who brings ideas and energy. A candidate who actually likes people and is liked by them. Leila can make that change. Sadiq can't.
The applause is a little stilted because he got the wrong party there, the late member of the Brains Trust.
And Farage was sitting right next to where he was standing. So he was, he said, sort of the respect party isn't perfect. And just to remind your listeners, that was the former George Galloway outfit.
I think he's going to fit right in, this Clive Furness character. As ever, with these press conferences, it's really just about giving Farage an opportunity to wang on about something.
Yeah, well, there was a chance to ask questions, so I asked him. He's made a lot of postal voting. He spent a lot of his speech before talking about it. And the various reports, and indeed he did confirm at the 2024 election, i.e. the last time he would have voted for a major election, and that Mr Farage actually voted himself by post. So I challenge the Reform UK leader on that.
Again, Mr Farage, if I could ask you about postal voting, you spoke about it again there. It was reported that at the last election you voted by post.
Well,
I'm saying, should politicians set an example to get people, more people voting in person?
I did vote by post at the last election, although I think I did actually turn up at the polling station with the ballot. So I received my postal vote. I received my postal vote, but I did actually deliver it on the day. But whatever. Look, you know, this was all sold as convenience. It's so much more convenient to have a postal vote. But I repeat the point that people are voting weeks before Election Day. They haven't seen the whole argument play out.
I'm not saying that every time he uses the word look, he's about to tell a lie. But I have noted in the past that when he says look, he says things that subsequently turn out to not be entirely true. Listen, I don't want to sound like an anorak, but he would have cast his vote somewhere in Kent.
Yes, so he is on the ballot paper when he was elected in Clacton. It said his official polling address is in Orpington in Kent.
Right.
So, I mean, he said he handed it in person. I have to say that there is no photographic evidence of that we can find.
But so he'd have been in Clacton campaigning.
He definitely started
and
the day
waiting
in Clacton
for the count.
Yes.
And then he'd have jumped in a car, driven to Orpington to hand in his postal vote in person, as he just claimed to you on tape, and then driven back to Clacton to attend the count for the election in which he was participating.
I don't know his timescale, but based on what he has said in terms of handing his vote in person, which you can do with a postal vote, it would have meant that he started the day in Clacton, as you say, went to Orpington to hand in a postal vote and not get any sort of photo opportunity because it's the wrong constituency, and then go back to Clacton. Again,
about 3 hours round trip, all in all, in the middle of a day when he was followed around by camera crews pretty much 24/7.
Well, and I was there on the day.
Did you see him disappear for 3 hours?
I didn't, but I did arrive late, in fairness, so we don't know on that.
No, that's true.
One other issue that I actually had a second question.
Oh, no,
James.
Hang on. Rob wants to know, did either of these defectors write any erotic novels?
That's a good question. I haven't found out yet, but you've given me an idea. Thank you.
Carry on.
Peter Mandelson was an issue that was raised at the press conference. Let me just remind you, James, this was Nigel Farage speaking last year on Nick Ferrari's show regarding Peter Mandelson.
Mandelson is, you know, a wily operator.
He is.
A survivor. A scorpion. He would survive a nuclear blast. You just know he would. You know. So he's a very clever... You think about the number of times he's come back in his political career from seemingly the whole thing being over. If I can help in bettering the relationship, I would do that for any member of the cabinet or any ambassador, because it's in the national interest.
That was Nigel Farage in January of 2025. He asked him about it today. This was his view of the Peter Mandelson appointments.
And I think the choice of ambassador, let's just not forget, you know, what has happened post-Mandelson is also pretty embarrassing for pretty much everyone involved. I mean, Trump's going to be saying to himself, isn't he, why did they send me this guy? If he was that compromised and had been kicked out of British politics times before, what was Keir thinking, sending me this guy?
Well spotted. How many stories have you got today in the Farage files proper?
I've got you... Two, three, four today.
Four more. Do you have... You know what my favourites are? I like the defectors who undefect.
Oh, well, it's your lucky day.
We've got another one. So you put your far right leg in, your far right leg out, in, out, in, out. You shake it all about.
Do the... So this is a Tory councillor who defected to Reform and has defected back. This was in Burnham-on-Sea. He spent 4 days in Reform UK and then decided to leave the party. He quit the Conservatives last week, saying now that he's made an error of judgment. This is Alistair Hendry, who's on Somerset Council, and said he was leaving the Conservatives for Reform UK because he wanted a new start in politics and that Nigel Farage's party had the answers. Right. He now has said that he relented in a weak moment to pressure from the party and that he regretted the decision... Almost immediately, he said, I woke up, really regretted the decision, so after 4 days, I've rejoined the Conservatives. I acted in haste, and after taking time to reflect, listen, consider my action and the interests of local residents, I've concluded that it was a mistake.
Interesting. I mean, that could have gone anywhere, that paragraph. I woke up the following morning and really regretted the decision. Good Lord.
Yes, and he also accused...
It's almost erotic novel territory, this.
He accused Reform UK, James, of chasing headlines.
Surely not.
Rather than what he said was following substance or going for substance.
Chasing headlines? You'll be telling me next that another councillor has had to apologise for racist comments.
Well, let me tell you, James, in Gloucestershire County Council, Councillor Mark Howard has apologised for offence for his comments that they caused. He's been accused of, and not my words, but blatant racism by a fellow councillor. The comments were also described as ridiculous. So these complaints were launched over his speech during a Gloucestershire County Council meeting in 2025, last year, towards the back end of it. And he was talking about the use of hotels to accommodate asylum seekers and the strong protests. He has said that he was speaking forcibly about an emotive issue. He made a reference about a Muslim woman walking three paces behind their husbands. Mm. He has now said in a written apology it was not meant to cause offence. Clearly, he said it was overly robust and drew on unhelpful stereotypes to convey the unintended hostility. Conservative councillor Sajid Patel at the time said it was ridiculous racism, but the Conservative group leader has said that it was blatant racism. It crossed a line.
Worcestershire.
Worcestershire. Yes, this is the council leader there who has is facing a potential no confidence vote. You'll recall, James, this was one of those councils where they promised sort of lower council tax. They've ended up putting council tax up by 9%, 8.98%. There is now a motion put forward with regards to getting rid of that leader. There's a potential vote of no confidence. The council leader there, Councillor Joe Monk, has said that it was the responsible choice and that there was, I mean, the government has had to give them £59 million in emergency government support, but she now faces a no-confidence vote, the leader of Worcestershire Council.
And Lincolnshire.
Lincolnshire. This is an interesting story. It's only emerged by some local reporting this morning, and locals are warning, and indeed tech experts, that the regeneration of that area, which Reform now run, they run the local council, the district council, sorry, county, I'll get there eventually, and said that council bosses have pooled funding on a science park. Now, this is the Whole Beach Food Enterprise Zone. This is sort of billed as a major way to boost investment in the town by bringing together academics, using the University of Lincoln, which, of course, is located one of the key parts of that Reform-led Lincolnshire Council. And the issue now is that Reform UK on the Lincolnshire County Council have decided not to invest in the site over the next 2 years, which they foresee opposition parties as being a loss of £4 million. So the accusation is that they're not taking investment in the area seriously.
So four yesterday, four today, an extra press conference, two defections, one bloke got the name wrong, and one other defection, which didn't merit a press conference, defected back again 4 days after leaving.
Yes, he went to the Tories, he's gone back.
Vote of no confidence in a closed science park.
Vote of no confidence in a closed science park, and there was the comments about Peter Mandelson, which changed.
Mandelson.
Postal voting.
Complete reverse ferret on Mandelson. The claims about postal voting, which I suspect you'll be looking into.
Yes. And it's Clive Furness, the councillor, by the way, who... the former councillor.
And he got the name of the party.
He said it was the Respect Party, which was George Galloway's party. But as we've said, there's a lot of parties beginning with R.
This is very true.
His defence.
Respect, Reform,
Restore.
Return them.
You've got... Restore, Respect, Reclaim, which is Lawrence Fox's party.
God, is that still going?
Technically, yes.
Brief.
They don't stand candidates, though.
I should probably mention that Reform would probably object to me singing the Hokey Cokey with reference to a far right leg, which makes it somewhat inconvenient for them that Hope Not Hate's latest research discovers that most members believe that non-white UK citizens born abroad should be forced or encouraged to leave. That would include Nadeem Zahawi and Suella Braverman's parents.
Yes.
So that's a majority of Reform members who would want Nadeem Zahawi to be deported and indeed Suella Braverman's parents. I only mention them because they're recent arrivals in the...
Respect is the wrong name. That's the ex-party of
Wretch.
George Galloway.
Is there one called Wretch yet?
No, there's Reclaim, there's Restore, there's Reform.
My favourite is called Rrr. It's just lots of R's.
And there's Advance as well. I mean, there's loads of them.
Advance! Who, Judean People's Front?
No. Well, Advance did stand in the Gorton by-election. They got 150 votes. The Monster Raving Loony Party got 159.
How many did the Tories get?
700-odd.
Okay, I read one columnist, I can't remember whether it was Dick Littlejohn, Dick by name, or Rod Liddell, who said the real winner of Gorton and Denton was Kemi Badenoch. He got paid for that. These are the jobs you dream of doing one day, Henry Riley. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You may have detected the presence of Sheila Fogarty in the studio. Tom Shawbrick will be with you at 4, but Sheila Fogarty is with you now.
Thanks very much, James. Henry's going to be joining me in about 20 minutes. We've changed the time, Henry, in case nobody's told you. Henry's going to join me to talk about what students have been saying about Keir Starmer's decision on Iran and Nigel Farage and his view on it as well. The Prime Minister in PMQs was sticking to his guns, wasn't he, over Iran. Donald Trump, as you know by now, I'm sure, said Keir Starmer is no Churchill. But it struck me this morning, if Iran is the question, and it is a Churchillian response from 80 years ago particularly the answer? I doubt Churchill was thinking of the Napoleonic Wars. Maybe he was when he made his decisions in the Second World War. Nick Ferrari tells LBC it is the answer, Churchill. And flights gather for stranded Brits. We'll have details on that as well.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer said we need to act with a cool head when pressed on UK involvement in the Middle East conflict during Prime Minister's questions.
The whole country is worried about the potential for escalation.
Right.
They're worried about the impact on their lives, particularly when they see what's happening with energy. The family and friends of those who are caught in the region will be worried sick. And, of course, we've got civilians and military personnel at risk in the region. We need to act, therefore, with clarity, with purpose, and with a cool head.
His comments follow last night's jibe by Donald Trump that he is no Winston Churchill. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch says Britain is not pulling its weight.
The US has taken offensive action to destroy missile launch sites to defend British territory. Why will the Prime Minister not allow the RAF to do the same?
She accused the government of increasing defence spending too slowly, but finding money for welfare. Sir Keir told the Commons the government will lay on two more charter flights to bring British nationals home from the Middle East. They're in addition to a plane leaving Oman this evening. Iranian state TV is reporting 1,045 people have died in the first 5 days of the conflict. Israel launched fresh strikes in Tehran and in Beirut in Lebanon today. In the last hour, we've heard three men have been arrested in London and Wales on suspicion of spying for China. Searches have been carried out at the addresses where they were arrested by counter-terror officers. Here's the Security Minister, Dan Jarvis.
We remain deeply concerned by an increasing pattern of covert activity from Chinese state-linked actors targeting UK democracy. This involves attempts to obtain information on UK policymaking and interfere with our sovereign affairs.
Three men linked to the Police Federation, which represents rank-and-file officers, have been arrested in a fraud investigation. Anti-corruption officers have detained men from Surrey, Wales and Bristol. And it's claimed the government must decide on tax hikes or big cuts to reach a NATO target for defence spending. Analysing yesterday's spring statement, the IFS think tank says the cost of the required rise is equivalent to current spending on the Ministry of Justice and Home Office combined. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 49 points at 10,534. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, staying largely dry and sunny for most. Patchy rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, highs of 8 to 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg. Flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. We'll hear a little of Prime Minister's questions in a moment as it relates to the war in Iran. And I'll speak to Alva Ray as well, political editor at The New Statesman, on what the decisions that Keir Starmer has made tell us about him since the changes at the top of his operation in number 10. But first, much like Monday, I'm going to go to the Pentagon and the States and listen to the Defense Secretary, the U.S. Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, on the latest on the war on Iran. Let's listen for a few minutes.
Complete control of Iranian skies, uncontested airspace. I hope all the folks watching understand what uncontested airspace and complete control means. It means we will fly all day, all night, day and night, finding, fixing, and finishing the missiles and defense industrial base of the Iranian military, finding and fixing their leaders and their military leaders, flying over Tehran, flying over Iran, flying over their capital, flying over the IRGC, Iranian leaders looking up and seeing only U.S. and Israeli air power every minute of every day until we decide it's over. And Iran will be able to do nothing about it. B-2s, B-52s, B-1s, Predator drones, fighters, controlling the skies, picking targets. Death and destruction from the sky all day long. We're playing for keeps. Our warfighters have maximum authorities granted personally by the president and yours truly. Our rules of engagement are bold, precise, and designed to unleash American power, not shackle it. This was never meant to be a fair fight, and it is not a fair fight. We are punching them while they're down, which is exactly how it should be. Thus far, Operation Epic Fury has delivered twice the air power of shock and awe of Iraq in 2003, minus Paul Bremer and the nation building. The campaign has seven times the intensity of Israel's previous operations against Iran during the 12-day war, seven times. And as President Trump said, more and larger waves are coming. We are just getting started. We are accelerating, not decelerating. Iran's capabilities are evaporating by the hour, while American strength grows fiercer, smarter, and utterly dominant. More bombers and more fighters are arriving just today. And now, with complete control of the skies, we will be using 500-pound, 1,000-pound, and 2,000-pound GPS and laser-guided precision gravity bombs, of which we have a nearly unlimited stockpile. We used more exquisite standoff munitions at the start, but no longer need to. Our stockpiles of those, as well as Patriots, remains extremely strong. The enemy can no longer shoot the volume of missiles they once did, not even close. And the chairman will lay out some of those percentages. So our air defenses and that of our allies have plenty of runway. We can sustain this fight easily for as long as we need to. And as I said yesterday, we set the terms. Now, you may not see much of it because the IRGC shut off the internet to the entirety of the country. They blind their people on purpose, just like they kill their own on purpose. Much was made of the volume of missiles Iran was able to shoot in the first few days. And sadly, as we projected, a few got through and killed six of our best, who will hopefully arrive home soon. We will avenge them, no doubt. But I liken Iran's predicament to a football team who scripted the first 20 plays of a game. The team knew what plays to run because their first few drives were scripted. But now that the game has started and the blitz is on,